You okay, Mom? Okay, Chair Padilla, the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you very much, Billy. Good morning and welcome everyone to the December 17th workshop with our local government partners, representatives from the League of California Cities and the Association of County Governments. This time, we'll please can call the commission to order and ask for the commission roll call.
Commissioner Amenzada. Commissioner Amenzada. Commissioner Bochco.
Here.
Commissioner Brownsey.
Present.
Commissioner Escalante.
Here.
Commissioner Gold.
Here.
Commissioner Groom.
Present.
Commissioner Hart.
Present.
Commissioner Howell.
Here.
Commissioner Ketchum.
Here.
Commissioner Urán.
Present.
Commissioner Warmerdam.
Present.
Commissioner Wilson.
Here.
Chair Padilla.
Present.
You have a quorum.
Thank
Sorry,
you.
I'm present, but I don't know if you could hear me originally, but
I got you.
Got it. All right. Let's move to Madeline quickly to go over virtual hearing procedures before we go any further.
Great, and if we could have the slides on the virtual hearing procedures, that would be great. So as a result of the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, this local government workshop is occurring through the video conferencing service Zoom to host the meeting and allow for remote public participation. This virtual meeting is also being webcast and can be viewed online at the calspan.org web address. If you have access to the internet and wish to watch or listen to the meeting only and not speak during the public comment session, we recommend you use the CalSPAN website. Those who wish to address the commission today can do so through the Zoom platform or by phone. The commission is not taking general public comments today. All public comments should be specific to today's workshop. On the commission's webpage, we have posted virtual hearing procedures, a guide for how to provide comments via Zoom or by phone. If you have access to the commission's webpage, you will find the instructions here as indicated by the yellow arrow. Next slide. Here is also a link to fill out a speaker request as shown by the red arrow. If you wish to speak today but have not submitted a request to speak, you may do so now. If you have access to the internet, please go to the commission's webpage and click on the link to fill out a speaker request. If you do not have internet access or prefer to testify by phone, please call the commission staff at 415-904-5202. Again, that number is 415-904-5202. Staff will provide you with a telephone call-in number and instructions for how to participate and provide testimony by phone. We will accept a request to speak until 9:15, and each speaker will be given 1 to 2 minutes to speak. We will manage speakers coming in and out of the meeting through a meeting organizer. If you are using a computer or similar device when it is your time to address the commission, the meeting organizer will invite you to turn on your video and microphone. If you are using a phone, the meeting organizer will give you instructions for how to unmute the phone. Mr. Chair, that concludes the virtual hearing procedures for today.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your work. Let's recognize Ed or Linda, the representatives from our partners, first to do introductions of our local government partners, and then we will turn it over to our very capable facilitator, Kaylin McGee, to go over the agenda review and get us right into the heart of the matter.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Jack, we were going to do agenda review in a workshop process next. Kaylin was going to run through that.
Okay. Why don't we have our partners introduce themselves first? And then we can get into the agenda.
This is Ed Waggy, Chair of the Coastal Cities Group of the League of California Cities, also the mayor of the city of Pismo Beach. And with me from the Coastal Cities Group, we have Jill Hardy from the city of Huntington Beach. And she's the past chair of past vice chair. We also have our new vice chair, Eric Friedman, from the city of Santa Barbara, and also the past chair of the Coastal City, Ed Spriggs, who's council member from the city of Imperial Beach. Thank you.
You.
And this is Linda Hopkins. I am the 5th District Supervisor for Sonoma County, and I am joined today by the 2nd District Supervisor, Bruce Gibson, from San Luis Obispo County, and 1st District Supervisor, John Leopold, from Santa Cruz County.
All right. Thank you very much, and welcome to all. All right. We'll bring it back to the agenda review and procedures for the workshop.
Hello, my name is Kaylin McGee, and I am a facilitator. I'll help keep track of today's proceedings and move us along to the different sessions. I'm sharing the agenda for our session right now. Very briefly, the goals for today are to present, celebrate the development of a joint statement by the Sea Level Rise Working Group, the local government Sea Level Rise Working Group, which is expected to be, is hoped to be a springboard for additional and more specific work coordinating around sea level rise adaptations in coastal communities and up and down the coast. So today we want to celebrate that joint statement, but then also turn our eyes forward to, again, additional specific, more specific work in 2021. And in that way, we're looking for feedback, guidance, questions, ideas from the public, from the commissioners, and from local elected officials about what you see as priorities and key questions that this working group can focus on. So that's the goal of today's session. Here's the structure of our session. We've already done call, we've already brought the meeting to order and done roll call, and here we are in agenda review. In a moment, turn back to members of the working group to, for some opening statements to introduce the work that we've done, as well as a quick eye forward. And we also have a brief update regarding state principles regarding sea level rise and some updates regarding Ocean Protection Council's planning. So those are brief, and those are just to set the stage for today's workshop. We then will go immediately to public comments because we want to hear from you. At that point, at the time for public comments, I'll introduce a couple of questions which can provide what the working group members think is some of the most useful information they can receive from you to help guide their work. But of course, your words are your own. And that session will be managed as they normally are in public session here in commission meetings. We'll take a quick break after public comments. And then there is time for a discussion among the members of the working group and commissioners reflecting on what was heard by the public, as well as talking about priorities and focus for work in the coming year. Again, we'll have an opportunity for another break if we need it, but can spend the last session with the working group reflecting with the commissioners on how to focus their efforts and where we can do what we can do in 2021. So that's our session for today. Again, starting with opening statements and moving quickly to public comments. And then some in-depth discussion on these topics. Thank you very much for joining us today. I am going to turn it over to Mayor Waggy and Supervisor Hopkins to start us with opening comments.
Thank you very much, Kaylin. Again, I appreciate the opportunity to address the commission this morning and talk about some of the things we've been working on. The League of California Cities does support the Sea Level Rise effort, and we're very pleased with the progress we've already made. I'm also excited about the prospects for the coming year. I say excited because I am optimistic that we can find some common ground to address the significant challenges we face with sea level rise. At this point, I would like to have our other team members from the League say just a few words. I'll start with our past vice chair, Jill Hardy. She's termed out from the city of Huntington Beach, but she's been working with us. Jill, go ahead.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jill Hardy, former council member in Huntington Beach. I'm teaching from my classroom, which explains the mask and any absences I take for a few minutes. Anyway, it's been great to work with this group over the last year and a half. I'm really optimistic about just opening up the conversation has been so helpful, and I'm glad this group will continue even if I can't be part of it.
Thank you very much, Jill. I'll then turn over to our new vice chair, Eric Freeman from the city of Santa Barbara. Go ahead, Eric.
Good morning, everyone. It's an honor to be here with all of you. I am the newest member, and I'm learning a lot from my time here and with you. And just want to echo the comments from Chair Waggy and former Vice Chair Hardy that I'm looking forward to the collaboration and looking at sea level rise adaptation, local sending updates, but in particular, how we can work together on statewide consistency, but also allow for local regional collaboration and flexibility as we look at sea level rise planning and adaptation here in City of Santa Barbara and throughout the state. So look forward to today's discussion and thank you for the opportunity to be here and be a part of it.
Thank you, Eric. And then we'll move on to our past chair, the Coastal Cities Group, Ed Spriggs, council member from the Imperial Beach.
Thank you very much, Mayor Waggy. I've probably been the longest serving member on this working group from the League of California Cities. I'm also on the board of directors of the League. And I'm really delighted the work that we've done, but also the League board for the very first time in ever has adopted a set of priorities for policy and advocacy for the coming year that includes, for the first time, sea level rise, climate change and sea level rise as explicitly called out as things that we need to address. And this is really groundbreaking, and it's also, as Mayor Waggy said, evidence of the League's endorsement of the Coastal Cities group and our efforts with this working group, with our county colleagues and commission colleagues, to really make some progress, find a consensus, and move forward on ways that we can harmonize the environmental needs that we all believe in so strongly with local community unique conditions that are very complex and very, very different from coastal community to coastal community. So I'm really delighted about where we are with this joint statement. I think it reflects tremendous progress. It may not seem like it, but there's a lot there that is a foundation for the way forward. And I look forward to continuing to work with the process. Thank you all, and with all of you. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Ed. Ed mentioned the joint statement on adaptation planning. That's the key for us to move forward. Your commission's already approved it. The League has, and so has CSAC. And it reflects that there are substantial differences, though, up and down the coast. We made a presentation to the working group on where we showed that, for example, the city of Eureka on the north coast has much different challenges than Imperial Beach in the southern end of the state or Santa Barbara or other cities in between. And the statement reflects, though, that there may be a need for a regional approach, and we're excited about that possibility, as well as the need for statewide consistency. We also recognize we need to be creative to be successful, since the most obvious solution may not be the best one. Finally, adaptation will not be cheap, and the cities will be looking for funding opportunities to help keep us, to help us adapt to the substantial challenges. We look forward to today's discussion and also welcome public comment to help guide us in our future efforts. And I thank you very much.
And now I'd like to step in and speak on behalf of county governments, along with Supervisors Bruce Gibson and John Leopold. I'd like to start by saying thank you so much to the commission for taking the time to continue this critical collaboration with local government. And I also want the commission to know that speaking on behalf of my county colleagues, we fully endorse the sea level rise principles for aligned state action that were approved by the commission in May. We really appreciate the commission's support of the joint statement drafted by our working group. And I feel that these two documents taken together, one spearheaded by the state and one spearheaded by local government, provide a strong shared vision for the coast of California in light of the urgent threats posed by climate change. I also want to acknowledge something up front, which is that over the years, I think much has been made of the tension between the Coastal Commission and local governments. But I think that we've come a long way since the Sonoma County Board of Supervisors actually refused to hold a hearing on a proposed nuclear power plant that was proposed out at Bodega Head and that actually helped catalyze the creation of the California Coastal Commission. Luckily, that was never built. But you know, I want you to know that I'm actually excited. I'm watching state and local agencies coming together in support of a vision of coastal statewide resiliency and data-driven response to the impacts of climate change. And I'm very excited for what the year ahead will bring. I want you to know that speaking on behalf of the counties, we support solutions that prioritize public access. We support solutions that prevent unmanaged retreat. We understand that armoring is a strategy of last resort, and we look forward to working collaboratively on win-win projects that can both enhance public access and also protect natural resources. We want to make decisions using the best available science, and we want the best practices throughout the state while also addressing unique local conditions. These are threads that run through both the principles as well as our joint statement. While I believe that all of us here today actually do share the same principles and values, I also acknowledge that we may sometimes differ on approach and implementation. But I hope that under the umbrella of our shared values, we're able to dive into some of those nitty-gritty details next year and come up with a real toolbox of practical strategies to address sea level rise for rural environments, urban environments, open space environments, heavily built environments, and everything in between. I know that some of us wants to talk about what constitutes existence of structures, the speed at which we can arrive at decisions, what exactly qualifies as last resort armoring, and what regional mitigation strategies could look like. But at the end of the day, I think we all want to be proactive, not reactive. And we want to make sure that government is able to make decisions before Mother Nature makes them for us. Perfection is impossible, but progress towards better, I believe, is fundamentally achievable. We really look forward to making progress and ongoing conversations with the Coastal Commission next year. I believe you'll be hearing from many local government representatives about what they might want to see out of a 2021 work plan. We're really looking forward to working with you and for you in 2021 and appreciate so much the commission taking time out of their extraordinarily busy schedules to listen to local government representatives today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Commissioners Groom and Wilson.
Well, I think I'll jump in here, and although I have to say, hard to follow Supervisor Hopkins and the really wonderful statement that she put out there. And I'll speak for both Supervisor Groom and myself and thank everybody and this local government working group for the commitment for working together on the sea level rise planning work for the year 20, as if 2020 wasn't, you know, complicated and stressful enough. We actually had some positivity in this space, and I'm very happy about it. And of course, there was, you know, mentioned before the kind of the inherent tension between, you know, the creation of the Coastal Act as a response to local governments, and so that's just part of how things are moving forward. And this agency seeks to represent the entire state in regards to the public access and public trust resources, and so we're all, you know, in negotiation with local governments about what that might look like, and I think that's part of what we do, and that's why I'm so glad that we were actually able to come together so well as we have. The coast, as we know, is going to be fundamentally changed over time by sea level rise, and the speed at which that's happening is. The data shows that that's more and more faster and faster every time we see an update. And we're looking at potential loss of beaches and recreational areas, loss of ecosystems, which is really important. And of course, it's risk to infrastructure and private properties. And so these challenges are, you know, basically are putting a lot of stress on local and state and local governments, as well as private property owners. And so there's a need to understand these impacts, and what's also unique is this is changes over time, and I don't mean that the impact that we predict changes over time. It's literally changing over time and space in terms of like what sea level rises. We know that, you know, that the ocean moves, and what is mean high tide level changes, and that changes on maps, and so this is a pretty complicated problem, and so, you know, this is going to require a real need for regional collaboration. It's not just a one-off project by project. We're really beginning to better understand that this is really regional issues. We're looking at tools such as local coastal plans, but also really looking at maybe joint powers authorities as well as special districts to try and address these issues. And I think it's important as we move into 2021 that, you know, that we're going to start really broadening our understanding of how we're going to work together to address some of these things. So we can't address everything all at once, and we do need updates over time. And so there's going to be negotiations over those times. There's going to be a balance between the statewide consistency, which was mentioned, as well as local flexibility, right? So people want consistency and flexibility. And so there's obviously going to be negotiations in how that works. And so I just, evaluating all these things, we know there's going to be significant impacts to our coast again. Mitigation will be most effective if it's regional. We're really understanding that. We're understanding that, mitigation on a postage stamp type project is probably, it's becoming more and more difficult. And that's really pushing us to think regionally about the solutions of what we're doing. And I just want to say that we're looking forward to this workshop, but we're also looking forward to getting some work done here in 2021, managing our time and our expectations, but as well as feeling very hopeful and getting the work done, as Supervisor Hopkins mentioned. So with that, I want to thank everyone for being here.
Commissioner Groom. Carol, not quite unmuted yet.
Sorry, I'm not good at that mute button. I want to express my appreciation to our counterparts from the League of Cities. What good meetings we had, what a really interesting exchange is, and knowledge. And I think both the cities and the counties learned some new things and certainly learned some new nuances of things. And so I think we've established a pretty good relationship now and ready to move into the next phase of this. But thank you again. It was really great working with you all, and look forward to our continued work. And I think we made good progress, and we all learned a few new things.
Thank you very much. Our last for opening statements is from Commissioner Gold.
Thank you so much. I'm just so encouraged to see this effort occurring. And I just want to say, on behalf of Governor Newsom administration, climate resilience is really one of our top priorities as a state. And if you've heard my boss, Secretary Crowfoot, talk about this, it's always brought up as one of his top three or four issues, as well as access for all and protecting biodiversity along with that, and social justice issues related to that. And so I'm really glad this is occurring and this sort of collaboration is happening. The Natural Resources Agency worked with CalEPA and 15 other different departments and agencies to put together a document making California's coast resilient to sea level rise, principles for aligned state action. And we did that working very closely with the Coastal Commission, Jack Ainsworth and Commissioner Brownsey and Almanzada. We're very, very engaged in that effort. And just to remind people, just seven basic principles, which are so consistent with what your group has collaboratively come up with, which I'm very heartened to see. Developing and utilizing best available science, building coastal resilience partnerships, improving coastal resilience communications. A big one, obviously, for this group, support local leadership and address local conditions. It's not a one-size-fits-all approach in any way, shape, or form. Fifth, strengthen alignment around coastal resilience. The whole state and all our different departments and agencies need to be going in the same direction. Implement and learn from coastal resilience projects. There's been so many good examples of that in the last 20 years that we can all learn from. And finally, integrate and prioritize equity and social justice. But rather than just leave you with those principles, I think it's important to lead by example and tell you a little bit about what the Ocean Protection Council is doing. And just to remind you, the OPC is chaired by Secretary Crowfoot, and co-chaired by Secretary Blumenfeld at CalEPA, includes the chair of the State Lands Commission, Betty Yee. And so here are the things going on. We're about to award $8 million in February for coastal resilience planning and coastal resilience projects. So many of you, many of your colleagues have applied for this funding. And so we're providing that. We learned a lot through that process. And to that end, we're not just saying here's $8 million and, you know, walk away and hope the projects get implemented well. We have a couple of other things that we're moving forward with this year. We're going to work very closely with the Coastal Commission as well as BCDC on awarding $2 million. This will be in a competitive fashion for sea level rotation planning. So I know that obviously that is those dollars have been hard to come by for local government. And so we're going to work much more collaboratively than we did this last round with the commission in making that happen. And then another $500,000 that'll be non-competitive for specific high profile needs also in sea level rise adaptation planning. And then finally, we'll probably do another round of competitive funding probably in late 2021 or 2022. That'll be projects in planning probably in about the $5 million range. We still need to figure that out. So I tell you all that to basically say that, you know, we here at the state really appreciate what you're doing, understand what a big priority this is. And we're here sitting to help in any way we can to really help this effort be successful, because we know that the challenge before us and trying to make the entire coast of California resilient to sea level rise is one of the most daunting in our state's history. And so the only way we're going to get there is close collaborative partnerships with city and county government along the way. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to all of our opening speakers for helping set the stage on this really important effort. And I want to say it's also been working with these very committed individuals who've put in a lot of time on these very difficult questions. So I am going to soon turn it back to Chair Padilla to begin public comment, but there's one more thing I wanted to do first, which is suggest what might be the most useful form of public comments and questions that can help guide the group. Again, of course, your words are your own, but the group thought and that this might help you provide them with the most useful information, which is if you have goals regarding sea level rise adaptation planning and project, your priorities, what you like to see, key questions, we'd love to hear about that. Many of the opening speakers spoke to the core challenge that this group, and indeed all Californians, coastal Californians, are wrestling with. How do you have successful adaptation planning, which allows for some local flexibility, utilizes regional approach to make the most of all of those decisions, but is accountable and consistent statewide to statewide goals, the Coastal Act, and our goals for the coast of California? That's a lot. That's hard to do. And so to the extent that you have seen in your worlds successful projects that take on those, balancing those challenges, this group would love to hear about that. Also, if there's people that you think this group should consult with, should learn from during their work in the next year, we would love to hear about those things. I'm not going to keep these comments, this slide open during public comment. This is just a suggestion for what this group would see as very useful feedback that they can incorporate into their work. But now I'm going to stop sharing and I'm going to turn the meeting back to Chair Padilla.
Thank you very much, Kaylin. And the commission and our local government partners certainly respect and very much value the participation of the public in this process. And we respect and look forward to your input on adaptation strategies. If you're able to tailor your comments in such a way as Kaylin just described, that's very helpful to the group overall. But you are all most welcome. When the staff facilitator brings you into the meeting, please state your name for the record. Your time will be limited to 2 minutes. And if we can have the first speaker, please.
Yes, our first speaker, I'm not finding Dr. Cheryl Oyeng there. Please use the raise hand function. If anyone is calling in on the phone, you can dial *9 to raise your hand. Our first speaker will be Cynthia Replogle. I'm promoting you to panelist. You'll take a moment to reload. And once you are in, please state your name for the record.
And you may begin. Hi, I'm Cynthia Replogle, a director on the Oceana Community Services District, but speak unofficially. In the debate about whether ATVs should be allowed to up environmentally sensitive habitat, and run over endangered birds in the Oceana Dunes, or whether a moneyed Central Valley tradition should trump the rights of disadvantaged locals to a safe beach and clean air, there's one significant point that's largely overlooked. Operation of the Pier Avenue vehicle ramp to Pismo State Beach, gateway to the Oceana Dunes State Vehicular Recreation Area, miles south, puts Oceana's homes busy.
If you'll please stop your comments for a second. If you'll please respect the fact that this is an opportunity to provide comment on adaptation strategies and not on Oceano Dunes or any other pending or specific controversy or item that will be before the commission. If you're unable to do that, I'll be happy to take the next speaker.
Hi, I'm getting to the comments addressing sea level rise, if that's okay.
Let's please get there. Thank you.
The operation of the Pier Avenue vehicle ramp puts Oceano's homes, businesses, and critical infrastructure at increased risk from sea level rise and tsunamis. The local hazard mitigation plan prepared for the Oceano CSD highlighted this risk, which the OCSD pointed out to state parks in a letter earlier this year. Over decades of use, countless tons of sand have been removed from the beach on vehicle tires, swept up and landfilled, creating a funnel for the sea where protective dunes used to stand.
Staff, we'll bring the next speaker. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker will be Sue Vaterlaas, followed by Sue Beckmeyer. Sue Vaterlaas, it is now your turn to speak.
Thank you. This is Sue Vaterlaas, City of Pacifica Council. We know that we all need to work together, but acknowledge, like was said in the beginning, that each community is unique. Our community depends on a seawall. The seawall protects housing, it protects businesses, it protects our hotels and our tourist industry. We have a pier that's frequented. We have beaches that are frequented by tourists and others. We need to fix this so that we can continue those services to everyone. Our houses near the ocean are generally smaller and therefore affordable. So that speaks to social justice. We need to have lower priced housing near the ocean so that people can live and work here. Most of our homes were built prior to 1977 and therefore would be subject to the residential adaptation guidelines. So that, again, speaks to our need for a seawall and the effect of this on our economy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we will have Sue Beckmeyer. Please unmute and state your name for the record, and you may begin speaking.
Good morning, Chair Padilla, honored commissioners, members of the League of Cities and Coastal Cities Group, and our county partners. I am Sue Beckmeyer. I am the new mayor of Pacifica, and I'm very pleased to be here today to reinforce our desire to work with the commissioners, work with the Coastal Commission staff. And our goal in our adaptation strategies is to find the very best strategy for each area, that be each coastal city, whether that be each area of each city. And as Councilmember Vaterlaas just mentioned, she was referring to the Sharp Park area in Pacifica, which does protect a lot of public infrastructure and a beautiful promenade and fishing pier that are accessible to all and provide low-cost visitor-serving purposes that are not available in very many places in the North County. We are part of the Coastal Trail, and our promenade connects to the Coastal Trail. We have a number of bicycle and pedestrian opportunities, and our promenade is something that I'm very proud to say is accessible really to all. We see vans that come and unload folks who have a variety of mobility challenges and supports with all kinds of wheeled mobility, whether it be wheelchairs, whether it be walkers, but it gives everyone a chance to have access to the coast. In addition, we do work already with a local partner, the City and County of San Francisco, because we're fortunate to have located in our town a beautiful municipal golf course that was designed by Alistair McKenzie that rivals any beautiful course on the coast. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Jack Liebster. If you can please unmute yourself and turn on your camera, you may name for the record.
My name is Jack Liebster. I'm planning manager for the County of Marin, and I'd like to congratulate the local government working group, which rightly stated that to solve the tough issues, coastal planning must be responsive, flexible, based on unique community contexts, and appropriately phased. While tremendously encouraged by this new direction, as we all know, the proof is in the planning and implementation. Marin County has submitted a letter with 11 examples pointing to how these new principles should be carried out in order to remain true to their potential. In the time that I have, I will discuss one of those and hope you will review the letter for other practical examples. Using adaptation pathways as a model for the working group's recommendation to phase LCP planning would create a sea level rise specific model for LCPs. As the working group makes plain, long-term sea level rise adaptation need not and indeed cannot occur all at once. Adaptation pathways can uncover the relationship between current actions and potential future options as the planning process goes through its sequential phases. In this approach, planning and implementation in the first phase can progress under more demonstrably predictable conditions, while planning for the next phase can begin at an appropriate time. But at each phase, we keep an eye on the long term to maximize overall effectiveness. This is what many advanced adaptation planners are doing now. And to avoid costly duplication and inconsistency of effort, LCPs should follow this model. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speakers, I am not seeing Sarah Wilder or Bonnie Ernst. If you're there, please use the raise hand function. Our next speaker will be Jeff Lumens. It is now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Jeff Lumens. Thanks for your time this morning. I represent the Alliance of Coastal Marin Villages, which is the sole appointed body for the 10 villages in Marin County's coastal zone. And earlier you asked for our advice on workshop priorities today. I'd like to highlight the advice sent in a letter by our chair, Jennifer Blackman of Bolinas, that when you consider sea level rise and work plans for 2021, that we specifically wish to highlight three key points from your recently passed joint statement on adaptation planning, which we also wrote a letter in hearty support of. First, that as Jack Liebster just said, that you deploy phased approaches to adaptation and consider those in LCPs. Second, we hope that you follow the use of incorporating collaboration with stakeholders, vitally including stakeholders and local communities who often know local contexts and can help with local flexibility. And third, and probably most important to us today, that you plan flexibly, respecting unique local contexts. I just want to call out on one simple short example from Jennifer and Jack's letters. We've worked here in Marin on our sea level rise section of our LCP for over 6 years with three failed drafts. Each draft came back requiring our homes be sited away from the ocean to avoid sea level rise. That's a one-size-fits-all approach, probably most applicable to blufftop development, except that here in Stinson Beach and the lying areas of Bolinas and in other local areas of Marin, when you move away from the beach due to back bay and estuarian conditions, you actually become more susceptible to sea level rise. So we urge that when you consider in the workshop today, respecting local context, that you listen to us locals who do understand these local contexts and incorporate those into LCPs. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Our next speaker will be Mary Halley. If you can please unmute yourself, turn on your camera. You may state your name for the record and begin.
Hi, my name is Mary Halley. I'm the district manager for the Muir Beach Community Services District and president of the East Shore Planning Group and a member of the Alliance of Coastal Marin Villages. I want to thank the commissioner and staff for this opportunity to speak today. I'd also like to add that the Alliance of Coastal Marin Villages was originally organized at the request of Senator Mike McGuire as a working group focused on coastal marin issues. And I think we would be a good group for the this working group to continue to reach out to, because we represent 10 coastal villages on in the West Marin Coast. We are optimistically happy that you have adopted the shared principles in your joint statement of adaptation planning. And we feel very important to these shared principles is that we have varying timelines, different local geographies, and the ultimate impacts of climate change will take all different forms in these natural environments. And so any planned response should be based on monitoring and evolving science. Also, the degree to which California and the Marin Coast will be affected by sea level rise is not completely known and is still a moving target. And we would hope that the commission will also look to mitigation strategies in as to challenges for mitigating climate change, working with our local agricultural communities on carbon sequestration, looking for different types of transportation methods, alleviate greenhouse gases from all the traffic that comes into our coastal communities. And we hope that mitigation, not just accepting the worst case scenarios, will be the ultimate goal here. Thank you.
Thank you. I am not seeing Lucia Casalunuovo, but if you are there, please use the raise hand function. We will move on to Janice Reed, followed by G. Taylor, followed by Mandy Sackett. Janice Reed, it is now your turn to speak.
Hi, thank you for giving me an opportunity to speak. I live in Arroyo Grande, which is two towns up from the entrance on Grand Avenue to our beach. And I was just down on the beach walking and listening to this. And I know we're not talking about traffic on the beach, but they do disturb the habitat of birds and animals. And I was watching a driver drive through all the piles of seaweed that are food for other species. Somehow, and I don't know how it should be done, but somehow I think we need to keep vehicles from doing that. And that's really all I have to say. I use the beach every single day as a pedestrian. Thank you.
Thank you. Not seeing Judy Taylor, our next speaker will be Mandy Sackett.
Hi, Mandy Sackett with the Surfrider Foundation. We're pleased to see local governments working cooperatively with the Coastal Commission to coordinate this statewide approach for sea level rise adaptation. The solutions will be implemented locally and regionally. However, statewide science, planning, and policy really has to guide those efforts. And the local government working group's joint statement on adaptation, we believe, really marks a step forward in developing shared principles. And we're so glad to see it out and appreciate this on cultivating creative adaptation solutions and the importance of updating local coastal programs. And it includes an acknowledgement of basic sea level rise planning needs, such as the use of best available science, policies, and on disclosure and assumption of risks, and policies to ensure that new development is appropriately sited away from the immediate shoreline, and the need for a phased approach to adaptation. And while these are all vitally important, they're not going to be nearly enough given the urgency of sea level rise, the devastation it will bring, more so if we're unprepared, and just the length of time it's going to take to really plan. So moving forward, we suggest that the working group strongly acknowledge the urgent need to plan over a longer horizon of 50 to 100 years and prepare for worst case scenarios, especially for critical infrastructure. Not only should local governments require the basics mentioned in the joint statement, but they should also proactively plan to relocate away from the shoreline wherever possible and really make that commitment so that we can work to preserve with natural shoreline processes, with living shoreline projects such as Surfers Point and Ventura. To be successful, the long, arduous process of planning and difficult decision-making for adaptation and to preserve our coast for generations to come has to start now. If our coast is drowned with sea level rise meeting seawalls, there will not be a coast left to access. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm now seeing Lucia Casanuovo. If you are there, can you please unmute yourself and state your name for the record?
Good morning, everyone, and thank you so much for
good morning,
Lucia. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Let me interrupt you real quick, if you might suspend for a second. I want to remind everyone, your participation in the workshop is most appreciated, and all of your testimony is most welcome and respected. That said, this is not an opportunity to link or address issues specific to Oceano Dunes or any of the pending review. So please limit your comments only to input on adaptation strategies, generally speaking, okay? If you don't do that, Lucia, I will cut you off and take the next speaker, okay?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Padilla, thank you. I just want to tell you that please consider that we are at risk of a flooding, and because the Pier Avenue is a corridor that could allow huge waves and tsunami to cover up Oceano. And so in my opinion, we need to have our local government work on this. And I just want to tell you that it is unfortunate and sad that our county is not really taking any action on this and has abandoned us. So in working with the regional and local government, just please, I don't know if it's in your power to reach out of this joint commitment, to reach out to our local government and take the situation of Oceano seriously. And that's all, and I thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next three speakers will be Laura Walsh, followed by Kristen Brinner, followed by Paul Alessio. Laura Walsh, it is now your turn to speak.
Hi, for the opportunity to speak on behalf of the Surfrider Foundation's San Diego County chapter. I'm going to just directly address those public comment guidelines. Surfrider San Diego's goal is really to see that thoughtful sea level rise planning is not treated as a one-sided issue, but is treated as an urgent need that affects our culture, our way of life, our beach economy, and our adaptive capacity to climate change. We have a number of adaptive projects in this region we are proud of that we hope this group can help replicate and support, including the Cardiff Living Shorelines Project, which includes natural dunes in North County, San Diego. We're also proud of the work done to preserve and restore what is left of the Mission Bay wetlands. We strongly encourage this group to work closely with the scientific community, including the Climate Change Center for Impacts and Adaptation at Scripps Oceanography, which is working on observation partnerships with local governments to improve predictive modeling of coastal flooding. And we'd like to see low-income and BIPOC communities included in discussions around sea level rise planning, particularly San Diego's tribal communities who historically coexisted with our coastal ecosystems here. And we'd really like to see these tasks addressed with urgency because it is the least advantaged members of our community who won't be able to enjoy the coast in the next 20, 30, and 40 years without swift action. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Kristen Brenner. And please unmute yourself and state your name for the record. You may begin.
Hi, my name is Kristen Brinner, and I'm a resident of Solana Beach and a volunteer with the San Diego chapter of the Surfrider Foundation. I'm here to stress the need for strong, proactive action if we have a chance of saving our precious coastline in light of sea level rise. And in light of the committee's request, I wanted to share my experience that I had. I actually served on the City of Del Mar's Sea Level Rise Technical Advisory Committee, And I think this could be used, honestly, as an example of how not to plan for sea level rise. We formed in 2016. We got an initial draft vulnerabilities assessment, and it was extremely scary. It showed how accelerated sea level rise would cause more frequent intense storms, more frequent flooding, and the loss of a walkable beach in Del Mar as early as 2030. Back then, when the committee wasn't swayed by politics or money, we saw the harsh reality that beaches were going to be totally lost to sea level rise if the back of the beach was fixed by seawalls. So we made, primary founding principle to maintain a walkable beach for recreational use. And this was such a promising start. As part of that, we also created a trigger-based action plan that provided the city flexibility to choose from an array of adaptation measures that included managed retreat. However, as things proceeded, the city and a majority of the planning committee bowed to increased pressure from a small but loud group of private property owners who objected to any discussion of managed retreat. So as a result, managed retreat was completely stripped as an adaptation option, and it just continued to go downhill from there. The whole process was unduly influenced by lawyers and lobbyists representing a concentrated group of beachfront property owners and homeowners. And this reflects what's happening throughout San Diego County as other cities start to plan for sea level rise. The voices of the wealthy and the privileged property owners are drowning out any opposition from the public. The public's beaches are being sacrificed in order to protect private property interests. I urge that this Coastal Commission be a strong voice here and speak for the public's right to access our beaches and prioritize that over the protection of private property. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Paul Alessio. You may now speak.
Okay. I'm Paul Alessio. I'm a coastal researcher at UCSB. I'm speaking on behalf of the Santa Barbara Surfrider Foundation. Some things I think to consider as we move forward. We're already dealing with coastal erosion without significant sea level rise now. And that in the future, with sea level rise, El Nino years imposed on top of that are going to be our greatest hazard. These events erode more beaches and sea cliffs than in any other year. And I think it's important to plan for El Ninos with sea level rise. Similarly, a whole coast approach is going to be really important throughout the littoral cell. And to maintain consistency in its own littoral cell, I think we need to focus on increasing and maintaining our sand supply to the beach, which means that it's going to be hard to have hard armoring structures that we know cause beach erosion, that we know affect downcoast properties and beaches. And so keeping consistency means keeping sand flow moving through the littoral cell. One thing that we can also do and think about is the misuse of emergency permits. I've seen a few of these in Santa Barbara, one at the university, where they applied for an emergency permit for a hard armoring structure in the summer when there wasn't an emergency. Since then, they received a letter from the coastal researchers and have made a science planning and advisory board. And this will be important because science can help guide our policies and how we manage our coasts. But our solutions will really reflect our values, whether we want beachside development and hard armoring, or we want beaches, tourists, and managed retreat. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next three speakers will be Graham Hamilton, Denise Erkenef, Nick Erkenef. Graham Hamilton, it is now your turn to speak.
Thank you, Chair Padilla and honorable commissioners. My name is Graham Hamilton. I'm the Surfrider Foundation Los Angeles chapter coordinator, and I'm tuning in from unceded ancestral lands of the Tongva people, who, along with all of California's indigenous coastal communities, should be invited to offer their insights in this process. When we think about sea level rise, our focus naturally falls along the coast. But with the raising of inland water tables and the saturation and disruption of soils that keep legacy contaminants contained, California's urban inland justice communities may be further exposed to harmful toxins as a direct result of sea level rise. On Tuesday, KQED ran a report about the dangers of groundwater rise. It's a domino effect of sea level rise that threatens to unleash long-buried pollutants in communities that for generations have been forced to endure the poisons of industry. So without bold planning that is just, equitable, and nuanced, lower-income families and communities of color will be disproportionately impacted by sea level and groundwater rise. As such, it's imperative that local governments emphasize environmental justice concerns throughout the 2021 action plan. Additionally, throughout the COVID shutdowns and stay-at-home orders, we've further awoken to the immense value of public open spaces. We know that seawalls can exacerbate erosion and destroy adjacent beaches. And if space is not created for the coast to migrate inland, we will lose precious open space that millions of Californians depend upon for their mental and emotional well-being. And because these decisions will impact public trust resources and the health and well-being of Californians living far from the coast, local governments must consider the effect their actions will have on all Californians, and not just those who are lucky enough to live at the beach. Really appreciate the time today and all of your work on this issue. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Denise Erkineff.
Am I in?
Yes.
Okay, great. Good morning. Denise Erkineff, chapter coordinator for Surfrider Foundation, South Orange County chapter. As Vice Chair Brownsey stated last week in the commission meeting, we know that many of California's local coastal management plans are very late in the game. And we're no longer talking about replacing man-made amenities or structures that Mother Nature and our ocean is reclaiming every month up and down our coastline. Of course, comprehensive long-term sea level rise plan and policy is urgently needed. And we thank the working group, the commissioners and staff for your efforts on that behalf. Emergency measures are failing miserably. Riprap, revetments, sand cubes, and the like are proving no match for long-term sea level rise and coastal erosion. And we need phased adaptation, managed retreat, and living shoreline plans sooner than later. Many haphazard band-aided projects are continuing without clear guidance to coastal cities and government entities. And it will cost more to the public tomorrow if not addressed today. Of course, you know, we have the added pressure of private coastal groups and special district homeowners that are worried about the ocean's impact on their private property. But they do have the means and the deep dollars to delay, engage in legal, prolonged attempts to override science and what they acknowledge and see is actually occurring, sea level rise and serious coastal erosion. Please remember that the Coastal Commission is chartered to preserve the public trust, our beaches, for all. Compliance and non-compliance issues are coming to the commission in record numbers. It's just plain wrong that we have to fight these issues for years and years, exhausting Coastal Commission staff, budgets, legal, and other watchdog groups' time, talent, and effort.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And our next speaker is Rick Erkineff. Please state your name for the record, and you may begin. Oops, looks like he got moved out. I'm moving him back in as a panelist. Rick Erkineff, are you back in as a panelist? Sorry about that.
I believe so.
Okay, we can hear you.
Oh, great. Sorry about that. Yeah, we're sharing the same computer. My name is Rick Erkineff. I'm the vice chair for the South Orange County chapter of the Surfrider Foundation. If we are to save our natural coastline, sandy beaches, rocky intertidal zone, and precious remaining wetlands, and comply with the governor's 30 by 30 vision, we have to be prepared to commit to moving away from the immediate shoreline and allow our coast to migrate inland. If our only response to sea level rise is to armor the coast, we will lose much of what makes California so unique and majestic. Local governments need to take seriously the need to retreat and look closely at the possibility of developing living shoreline projects coupled with phased retreat. The California Coastal Commission took a huge step in the right direction back in February of this year by denying an over-engineered, under-mitigated seawall project at my beach, Strands Beach, in my hometown of Dana Point. On this past Monday, during the highest king tide of the year, there was actually dry sand at this beach. This project had been completed as planned, the seawall would have killed this beach. Surfrider Foundation's hope is that local governments will seek to follow this example by looking seriously at alternatives to shoreline. The local government working group's joint statement on adaptation planning is lacking a commitment to avoid hard armoring, which we all know only exacerbates erosion, drowns our beaches. The California Coastal Commission statewide policy guidance directly calls for solutions that avoid armoring and encourages all jurisdictions to plan for space for the coast to migrate inland wherever possible. This is the main way to preserve public trust, resources, and our remaining sandy beaches. Avoiding hard armoring projects is the main strategy that will save our coast for future generations. Thank you so much for your time and your energy today.
Thank you. Our next three speakers will be Frank Vella, Ray Hiemstra, and Caitlin Kalua. I'm not seeing Frank Vella at this time. So Ray Hiemstra, it is now your turn to speak. Please unmute yourself and state your name for the record, and you may begin.
Good morning, commissioners. This is Ray Hiemstra with Orange County Coast Guard. And thanks for the opportunity to speak. I'm speaking to you from Orange County, which is one of the centers of denial for sea level rise and climate change and the like. So I really want to talk to statewide consistency, especially in when it regards to critical infrastructure. Desalination plants statewide, there's a number of proposals. All of these are going to be right in the coastal zone. These need to be thought out ahead of time and not put in the way of sea level rise. You know, one of the things that was asked for was for specific, you know, examples. And the Poseidon Huntington Beach project is one that, you know, they're proposing to put in the way of sea level rise along with its mitigation. So what I'm asking for is that, you know, when the cities and the counties and all of these, you know, it's great. You need to have some flexibility, but we really need some statewide consistency, because you're going to have some bad actors out there that are just going to end up trying to pass the buck to the future and leaving the problems for future generations, and the costs for armoring, especially when it regards to critical infrastructure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Caitlin Kalua. If you can please unmute yourself and state your name for the record.
Sure. Good morning. Caitlin Kalua. I'm policy manager with California Coast Alliance, which represents local waterkeeper organizations throughout the state. Briefly, as described in a 2019 report by the Legislative Analyst Office on sea level rise, this decade is a crucial time to prepare and plan for changes along California's coast. Essentially, before more extreme and more expensive solutions are the only option for California to act. This includes proactively investing in natural infrastructure that can help both protect existing communities and bolster ecosystems, such as sand dune restoration, wetland restoration, and some areas, oyster reef, act as natural barriers to wave and storm surge. And especially given the 50 to 100 plus year lifespan of most infrastructure and buildings, there really is a need to avoid building in sea level rise inundation zones. Sites that may have seemed safe for 80 or 100 years might now only be stable for 40 or 50 years as the risk of coastal flooding increases over the next century. My organization, California Coastkeeper Alliance, is committed to ensuring the resilience of California's coast for both its communities and its habitat, and ultimately to ensure that taxpayers' dollars are not wasted on projects and development that will be underwater. We're working to ensure that both the state and local governments are provided the resources they need to comprehensively and responsibly plan for sea level rise, not only on our coast, but in all areas that are vulnerable to inundation. One effort I would like to flag is Assembly Bill number 67, which was introduced just last. This bill will direct the state to develop a standardized methodology to conduct an economic analysis of sea level rise risks and adaptation strategies, including the risk of no action, which is to be shared across all state agencies and local governments. We ultimately encourage this committee to consider these long-term economic impacts when considering future projects, and to avoid building in inundation zones to protect the safety of our communities and to prevent losing unique, irreplaceable coastal habitat. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you. Our next three speakers are Craig Cadwallader, Lydia Ponce, and Melinda Cotton. Craig Cadwallader, it is now your turn to speak.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Craig Cadwallader, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Surfrider Foundation South Bay chapter that's in the LA area. And I serve as policy coordinator for the chapter. And rather than repeating the excellent points that have been mentioned previously, I'd like to share with you some of my experiences that are related to sea level rise in the South Bay area. I used to rent a property on the Strand in Hermosa Beach, and I remember going through the El Nino storms of 82, 83, and in the 90s, excuse me, where seawater actually ran completely across the beach. In fact, I had to sandbag my kitchen door, which were Dutch doors facing the ocean, to prevent seawater from rushing in underneath the door. I got admonished for that, for using beach sand, when the city had a pile of sand on the city hall lot. But that's an example of what we're going to see in the future. I also am aware of the Broad Beach Homeowners Association attempt to get sand from Manhattan Beach to replenish their diminished beach because of the armoring of the revetment they put there. So I would hope that local coastal plans would include more of a focus on hard armoring and managed retreat. And the place I used to rent is now replaced by a $16 million house. And the infrastructure exposure to sea level rise is excessive. I hope it's included in the working group's statements. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Lydia Ponce. It is now your turn to speak. So please unmute yourself, turn on your camera, and you may state your name for the record. Lydia Ponce. Lydia Ponce, are you there? Our next speaker would be Melinda Cotton, but I think that she's disappeared from panelists. David Grubb. Oh. Okay, we can keep it moving. Our next speaker will be Dawn Schmitz. If you can please unmute yourself and state your name for the record, you may begin speaking.
Good morning, commissioners and panel. Are you hearing me? Good. I'm speaking on behalf of Smart Coast California, which is an organization dedicated to working with the local governments and the Coastal Commission on the issue of critical issue of sea level rise. We've been enjoying our conversations with Jack and several commissioners. We would like to continue to be a part of the process and the conversation with any working groups which are formed. Having some 90,000 members, which are deeply involved in their local communities, we understand the nuances of the different coastal communities, and we think that we're heartened by comments that have been made that this should not be a one-size-fits-all type of approach. We do think that it would be very important if the commission, the counties and the cities would acknowledge something which we believe is fundamental, which is that these iconic coastal cities are very much every bit as important as, say, critical infrastructure like the ports. A house is just a house. A group of houses is a neighborhood. And entire neighborhoods, well, those form communities. And we believe that some of these communities are worthy of the same type of protection and accommodations that, say, for would have. We do not believe it would have been appropriate for the entire southern part of Del Mar to go into the ocean. We don't think individual houses like the Chapman House in Pismo Beach should be lost as a historical building. We don't think that Balboa Island and parts of Newport Beach should be surrendered to the ocean, or the historic waterfront of Monterey. We do support manage retreat in other areas where it can be accommodated and should be approached in that fashion. So the mixed and balanced approach is something which we strongly support, and we stand ready to work with the commission, the counties and cities going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm now seeing Lydia Ponce. If you're there, please unmute yourself, turn on your camera, and state your name for the record. Lydia Ponce. See, you have your hand raised. I just saw you. Nope. Okay, we'll come right back to you. Oh, are you there? Lydia Ponce? Okay, we'll return. Our neckers will be Gina Zari, followed by Leslie Purcell, followed by Christy Weir.
Can you hear me?
Gina, oh, is that Lydia Ponce? I think we might be having some technical difficulties.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. I apologize for that. I don't know what's happening. Strange things. What can I say? Lydia Ponce calling from Venice, California, and I really want to encourage the California Coastal Commission to take a look at building and safety as they have approved these developments with basements all around throughout the throughout the 3 miles of Venice, let alone, let's include Marina Del Rey and everywhere else, north and south of us. The project behind me was approved for 5 feet for some kind of washing, you know, area. And now it's 30 feet deep without any kind of reprisals. But the local governments, including the neighborhood council, aren't really doing a great job of aligning themselves. But our city and county municipalities should commit to seeking out opportunities for natural-based adaptations, the solutions that will bring multiple benefits to communities and coastal habitats. But we have this language. I'm listening to the speakers, and we have this battle for nature. It's like a war. What we're talking about is water, the most powerful of all medicines, water. When will we respond to Earth Mother's need to heal in a good way? That's why we need to require that the California Coastal Commission visit with local indigenous tribes. The people, the tribal people, need to have that free, prior, informed consultations and tribal consent. Otherwise, we as a California coastal community, we will suffer in repeating the errors of the past and the unhealthy decisions to further environmental disasters and devastation. We are asking the California Coastal Commission to be better relatives to all relatives, be a better relative for 7 generations to come. And it's not allowing Indigenous people. It is inviting and listening and having them guide these conversations. We don't have very long to make this right for everyone, for all living things. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Gina Zari. Gina Zari, it is now your turn to speak.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me? I guess you
yes,
can.
Please
Hi, Gina Zari with the San Mateo County Association of Realtors. Just, I wanted to briefly just mention that manage retreat is necessary and a decent policy, understandable, reasonable policy in many areas along the coast of California, particularly where there are fewer people, scarce populations. But in situations and in areas like Pacifica, where large amounts of affordable housing exist, large population, tons of infrastructure exist, it's really important that we don't, you know, create a panic and fear in the minds of residents. We have a lot of hopefully unnecessary panic and fear in residents in Pacifica because it hasn't been established that managed retreat won't be applied to areas that are depopulated and that would, quite frankly, bankrupt the city if they were to be implemented like managed retreat. So I just wanted to put it out there that it would quell a lot of fears and a lot of concern and a lot of anxiety on the part of our residents if the Coastal Commission could make it clear that those policies will be reserved, policies such as managed retreat will be reserved for areas that are more scarcely populated. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker will be Leslie Purcell. Please unmute yourself, state your name for the record, and you can.
Hi, I'm Leslie Purcell, and I'm a member of the Sierra Club Angeles Chapter Water Committee. And I would like to also reiterate that I think it's very important to include our Native American and Indigenous local people along the coast, particularly in this process, and get their input. I also would like to speak a little bit about what was mentioned before about desalination plants right along the coast, and that these plants would be subject to sea level rise. I think that this is a really critical issue because there's a huge amount of public expense involved with that, and involves a lot of considerations in terms of intake of seawater and loss of marine life, et cetera. So the Coastal Commission and this planning entity needs to really possibility of not permitting these kinds of things where sea level rise is a significant factor. In terms of managed retreat, I've actually been in Ventura and we've had a very successful managed retreat. First phase along the mouth of the Ventura River, and Surfrider Foundation was very involved in that, as well as the city and the county. As far as visually, I would like to say that I have a concern about permits for houses with basements that I've seen the Coastal Commission allow right there in the coastal zone, and those would be subject to sea level rise particularly. So I think that you need to consider that because of pumping and dewatering that would be necessary. And this would affect our aquifers and freshwater wetlands as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Christy Weir. If you can please turn on your camera, unmute yourself. You may state your name for the record and begin.
Hi, my name is Christy Weir. I am from the city of Ventura, a former mayor and former, am I still muted? There. And former vice chair of Beacon, which is our JPA for the Ventura County and Santa Barbara County coasts. I would like to say thank you to the Coastal Commission for all your help, and also for the Ocean Protection Council for the help with our successful retreat Living Shoreline Project by the fairgrounds here in Ventura, the Surfers Retreat Project. The city of Ventura has been extremely happy with the success of that, and we realize that that sort of solution doesn't apply to all areas. It was the perfect area that had room to retreat back, but it's a great example. And we're gonna need some help moving forward on phase two, which is fortunately has a plan that has been approved because we got a planning grant from the OPC. Thank you very much for that. And so the two main elements that the city of Ventura and our whole county looking for in terms of going forward with the Coastal Commission and resiliency planning. We are looking at our general plan and our local coastal program going forward, and we're going to want to look for collaboration to make sure we do it right. And we are going to look for collaboration with Union Pacific. We have quite a few areas in around that are compromised by sea level rise that Union Pacific is going to have to deal with their tracks. And I want to put in a good word for regional planning. The Beacon Group, which is a JPA, has been extremely successful in together to come up with solutions that fit specific areas. And I would like to talk about new projects like hotels that are built right on the beach and what the requirements are for those. We need the help from the Coastal Commission.
Thank you. Thank you. Our next three speakers will be Ashley Eagle Gibbs, Emily Parker, and Jeff Miller. Ashley Eagle Gibbs, it is now your turn to speak. So please turn on your camera, unmute yourself, state your name for the record, and you may begin.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. Good morning, Chair Padilla, commissioners and working group members and chairs. My name is Ashley Eagle Gibbs, and I am the conservation director with the Environmental Action Committee of West Marin. Our mission is to protect and sustain the unique lands, waters, and biodiversity of West Marin. And our work focuses on the environmental issues impacting the unincorporated coastal communities from Dillon to Muir Beaches. The climate crisis touches all of our work. We continue our focus on climate adaptation as of Marin County's Coastal Communities Working Group, and it's nice to see many of the other members speaking before you today. This effort continues our longstanding work on the local coastal program amendments and our involvement with other Marin County climate adaptation and resiliency projects, as well as our past participation in the Coastal Sediment Management Regional Working Group. We are also actively engaged in supporting coordinated state climate and adaptation planning efforts, including the Principles for Aligned State Action and the Joint Statement on Adaptation Planning. We're looking forward to the release of the Commission's residential sea level rise policy guidance in the future as well. Specifically related to adaptation planning, our priorities are focused on supporting proactive long-range planning, nature-based solutions rather than armoring, the protection of priceless coastal resources and biodiversity, the community character of our coastal villages and public access, while also taking equity into account. We support the use of best available science as our coastal villages adapt to changing conditions, and we also support consistency with past LCPs and the Coastal Act, while acknowledging that each LCP and village is unique. We hope that this coordinated approach will move us away from reactivity and from emergency permits. Thank you very much for your tireless dedication to working collaboratively with local jurisdictions and stakeholders. And thank you to the counties and cities for their leadership and partnership.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Emily Parker. If you can please unmute yourself, you may state your name for the record and begin.
Good morning, Chair Padilla, commissioners, and members of the working group. My name is Emily Parker, and I'm the coastal and marine scientist with Heal the Bay. Today, we're very pleased to see local governments, agencies, Coastal Commission working cooperatively on a statewide approach for sea level rise adaptation. Sea level rise is no longer a problem of the future, but a problem of the right here and now. As the manager of our local MPA Watch program in Los Angeles, I have seen firsthand how sea level rise is already impacting invaluable stretches of our coast. The recent King Tide events showed us what our future coastline will look like, and we documented entire beaches swallowed by the sea where hard armoring has prevented natural retreat. It won't be long before these beaches no longer exist, decreasing access, impeding scientific research, and forever altering our coastline. While the joint statement marks a step forward and acknowledges the basic needs for sea level rise planning, it lacks specific and necessary actions that must be taken. So today we urge the local government working group to prepare for worst case scenario sea level rise and prioritize nature-based solutions for adaptation planning. These include living shorelines, wetland restoration, restoration of natural sediment regimes through the removal of stream barriers and natural buffers. Adaptation planning can no longer rely on hard armoring and seawalls to prevent and delay impacts from sea level rise. Our governments must begin to proactively plan for managed retreat, as this process will require extremely difficult decisions. California's most vulnerable low-income communities will be disproportionately impacted by sea level rise, and if plans are not in place to migrate these endangered coastal communities inland, we will lose critical outdoor space and coastal access. In order to conserve our coastal resources and protect these communities and to comply with the governor's 30 by 30 initiative, we have to start taking managed retreat very seriously and commit to developing bold action-based plans or we'll lose our precious coastline. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Jeff Miller. If you can please unmute yourself and state your name for the record, you may begin.
Hello, I'm Jeff Miller. I live in Long Beach in Belmont Shore. I'm at the beach several times per week. Local governments need more encouragement to respond productively to sea level rise. I see the daily activity of sand replenishment as large tractors move sand from the west portion of the beach to the peninsula on the east end. I see the city placing a barrier of 4 by 8 foot sheets of plywood adjacent to homes on the peninsula at the King Tides. The money and effort would be better spent preparing for and adapting to sea level rise, not fighting it. Long Beach will be bringing a proposal to the commission to build the BBAC, a large freshwater swimming pool complex on the beach. This project is planned in denial of sea level rise, not adaptation to it. When it is presented to you, I hope you will deny the city's proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next three speakers will be Cindy Abbott, Kathy Knight, and Jacob Patterson. Cindy Abbott, it is now your turn to speak, so please unmute yourself and state your name for the record.
Good morning. I'm Cindy Abbott, a resident of the coastal city of Pacifica. First, I'd like to thank the members of the commission for their decision in June to deny a coastal development permit for 7 townhomes that had been approved by our local planning commission and city council for a project site that was one of the most hazardous in the area due to overtopping and wave runoff. Listening to your staff experts, your foresight ensured the safety of future generations and a reduction in what clearly would have required increased armoring and or mitigation to remove structures, something we've had to do way too frequently in Pacifica. I applaud the Coastal Commission for recognizing that today's decisions will weigh heavily on how the California coast will not only look in the future, but how Californians will be able to equitably access our shared coastal resources. A strong position against continued coastal armoring, to listen to unbiased experts to seek natural alternatives, to pursue the difficult conversation on managed retreat, and a constant view to the future are requisites for sea level rise adaptation planning. Through the San Mateo County Office of Sustainability, Sanchez Arts Center in Pacifica is working on a creative engagement project, including coining new words to face the fears we're dealing with to address sea level rise. Your actions will ensure that we let go of the attitude of nowism, an unwillingness to look beyond today's human desires, and take a stand for thenism, a recognition that today's actions have consequences. We need the mindset you and your staff exemplify of long-range visioning in a way that is intentional, mindful, and sustainable, respecting all creatures who inhabit our coastal environment. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Kathy Knight. If you can please unmute yourself, state your name for the record, you may begin.
Hi, my name is Kathy Knight, and I'm with the I've been working with the Biona Ecosystem Education Project for the past 27 years to protect and restore the Biona wetlands in Los Angeles County. And they're most freshwater wetland. And the reason I'm concerned is I wanted to ask for your input. There's currently a plan to lower the level of this coastal wetland, freshwater wetland, about 20 feet with a huge bulldozing project that would use that dirt to make 20-foot berms along Lincoln Boulevard for a flood control system for Playa Vista.
Can you hear me?
Didn't do their own. Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you please hold for a second? Can you please limit your comments to the guidelines that were described?
Right. So the question I have is how it makes no sense to many of us. How can we consult with you? Like how would we work with you or consult with you to bring our concerns and our questions to be able to talk to people about this? Like consultants or experts who know about situations like this. That's basically my question.
With our staff experts, and as we go through the process of addressing the issues that are specific, for example, to Biona, there's extensive public opportunity to engage in that process, and we welcome that. But today's workshop is really to get some feedback on the principles and actions that were developed by the working group, and we would welcome your comments about that. Otherwise, we would certainly follow up with you, with staff, to help facilitate your desire to participate more extensively with respect to Biona.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Knight.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Jacob Patterson. Jacob Patterson, if you can please turn your camera on, unmute yourself. You may state your name for the record and begin. Jacob Patterson. And we are looking for 6 other speakers. I'm not seeing them, but I'll give a final call for Sarah Wilder, Bonnie Ernst, Judy Taylor, Frank Vella, Melinda Cotton, and David Grubb. If any of you are in the attendees list, please raise your hand. And once again, Jacob Patterson, you should be in as a panelist. If you're there, please unmute yourself. No. Chair, I'm not seeing any of those other folks that I just called. Jacob Patterson, final call. I think that concludes our public speakers.
Thank you very much for that. Well done. And again, to the members of the public who participated and testified, we're very grateful for your participation. I know that our agenda notes that this might be getting close to the opportunity for a short break. We on the agenda calendars it for about 10 minutes. We might beat that by you. So if it's the pleasure group together, we'll take a brief break and return at 10:45. Is that agreeable to everybody? I see a lot of heads nodding, so the workshop will stand in recess until 10:45. Thank you. All right, I do believe we have a quorum. So we will reconvene the workshop. And I believe at this point, we'll turn it back over to Kim.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate public comment and a great way to start our discussion today. Our next session starts with session 5. A discussion about goals and objectives for this working group in 2021. And again, I'll just briefly show just a couple of slides because to set the stage for this discussion. So you all are very, have a lot of experience in this area, a lot of knowledge. A lot of you are working on the front lines of all of this. So we know that you'll take this conversation where it needs to go. And again, the group, in thinking about this workshop, and not just the working group meeting, but inviting you all in to help plan for the next year, thought about a suite of questions that could help this group with its work. Just like in the public session, where we heard some examples, where people asked us to look at some places where some adaptation planning has either worked or where there's been difficulties, several were highlighted in the public session. We are interested in hearing from you all about recent examples of phased or flexible approaches that you'd like to highlight. Maybe they can be case studies or can be opportunities for lessons learned in our coming year, or organizing frameworks around which we can have very specific discussions about adaptation planning instead of staying in the general. So if anybody wants to talk about recent examples or successful or challenges that you've seen that you'd like this group to evaluate, that's great. I'm also happy to hear about specific issues or initiatives you'd like to see the group address in the coming year, ideas about what you think can be accomplished, things that are ripe or ready or on the cusp that deserve a little bit more attention or that could be helped by this group of elected officials and commissioners. Again, lessons learned that you've seen, or how we can get together to advance efforts for funding, both for planning and for projects. Additional questions could include, do you see changes to the working group structure that you think would be useful? And again, and we got several very useful comments from this on during public comment period. Are there specific communities, interests, agencies, or groups? Who would you like this group to consult with and learn from? And again, we got some great comments on that in the public session. So I will open it up to discussion among our attendants here. And this is, I'd like to give two tools for managing the queue because I want to make the most of the time while also not being too heavy-handed or stilted about conversation. So please, if you'd like to, if you have a general comment or a conversation you'd like to start, if you use in your participants window, if at the bottom of your screen there you see where 61 participants and you hit that button, you have the ability to raise your hand electronically. And then I'll know that you're in the queue and you want to join. If we are in the midst of a conversation and you really want to get a point in and don't want to wait a bunch of turns, but want to keep the continuity of the conversation going, please make a gesture in your window. And I will try to incorporate you in that so that we can have a little bit. And if that doesn't work, if it gets really clumsy, I'll just have to go back to raising hands. But because you all are used to working with each other, used to speaking briefly to make room for a bunch of conversation, then I want to leave as much possibility for a conversational type of discussion, if that's making any sense. And I already see that Commissioner Uranga and Amezada would like to start. And so I'm happy to go in that order. And again, please, if you'd like to speak, please raise your hand in the participant window or capture my attention here, and we'll go from there. Commissioner Uranga, please. I hope, yeah, that works too. And I hope I pronounced your name correctly. If I didn't, I apologize.
Well, you pronounce it the anglicized way, Uranga, but it's Uranga with the Spanish pronunciation, but that's okay. It's been like that all my life. So, madam. One of the things that was that did come out during the public comment is, and one of them that's most important to me, obviously, is the whole issue of the equity lens. All the projects that we've been reviewing as of late have really had a focus on equity and access for individuals to come in and enjoy the beach. Along with that has been the issue about armoring and kicking environmental issues down the coast when we're looking at projects that require or need, you know, riprap or any other kinds of armoring devices that, in order to protect what's already there. So one of having said that, I think one of the most important issues that we need to look at is also having expanded inclusion with getting other stakeholders involved in many of these projects that come before us. A few that come into mind, obviously, is a State Lands Commission, the Army, a Corps of Engineers, and the maybe even the Department of Interior when we're dealing with issues, and especially concerning sea level rise. So I think we have the commission is being challenged to look at these projects with that kind of lens, and we need to continue to have inclusion as a part of it with our social justice and equity issues that come involved as these projects come to us. I'm from a beach city, obviously Long Beach. I'm also a member of the League of Cities Board of Directors, as I don't see him up here. I don't know if he's still here. Our councilman from down in Imperial Beach, and we've talked, you know, offline on some of these issues through the Coastal Cities Caucus in the League of Cities, and there's a continuing concern, especially, you know, we not dealing with it today, but we have dealt with it in the past in regards to cities submitting their LCPs and trying to keep and commission staff trying to keep up the applications and even offering scholarships to jurisdictions to ensure that their LCPs are updated and or applying and implementing them for them for cities that do not have one, namely City of Los Angeles. But that's another issue for another time. Those are my comments for now. Of course, I'm looking forward to a real robust discussion on this whole issue. But I think that we need to keep the equity lens front and foremost. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for
facilitating this workshop for us. Wonderful.
Of course. Thank you, Commissioner Uranga. Commissioner Amezada and then Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you. Can you hear me? Yes. Okay, good. Yes, thank you. I serve on the Sea Level Rise Working Group, and I actually started my work with the Coastal Commission on Sea Level Rise as a advocate working at a nonprofit. I commented on the 2015 sea level rise guidance. And before that, I actually commented on the Natural Resources Agency's climate adaptation strategy in 2009. So for me,
it's been 10 plus years of thinking about as a state how we can best adapt to sea level rise. And I really appreciate the work that all of our local partners and our local government committee have done over the past year to try and articulate the principles that we want to espouse as we go forward together. And as Mark Gold mentioned, we've also been doing that work at the statewide level. What I want to express today is that I hope that now that we've done that work to think about our values and our purpose, we can really move forward to take action. I think that the time for action is upon us. And so as we talk today, I hope that we can really be focused specifically on what can we do in 2021 that will change things in a positive way so that when we have this meeting next December, we can really look back and measure the progress forward. What policy reforms do we need to see? What projects do we need to put into action at the local level? What funding opportunities do we need to seek out together? And what are some of the hard decisions that we anticipate having to make as a state in the coming year, whether it's coastal armoring or infrastructure relocation or protection or other such efforts? So I just want to encourage us to really hold ourselves to account, and I hold myself to account, of what we are actually doing, because my feeling is that every month when we sit on the dais and we consider various projects before us, I'm worried we're losing beach that we will never get back. I'm worried that we are shoring up armoring that will cut off sand delivery to the coast and prevent accretion that we really need to happen. So I'm really challenging all of us to talk about not only what we think and why we think that, but what we will do together. Thank you.
Thank you. Please go ahead, Bruce, and then I've got Ed. Yeah. Yes, please.
Thanks. So let me start by endorsing Commissioner Almanzada's desire to see stuff get done. I'm a card-carrying member, as are many CSAC supervisors, of the Get Stuff Done Party. That's our credo, and so I too look forward to having something concrete to report. I'd like to go back and touch on the equity lens that Commissioner Urunga brought up, and we tend to think of sea level rise adaptation often as the cost of that adaptation is falling to private property owners, but we also know that there's a lot of public infrastructure, public facilities that are threatened by sea level rise. And I guess the question there is, and it came up in a discussion of some, it sounded like relatively affordable housing in Pacifica. How do we take care about the costs that would be visited on perhaps disadvantaged communities? I have an example that I've used at the working group of a sewer plant on the beach in a disadvantaged community in my district. And so one of the concepts that I'd like to see the working group explore is feasibility. What does it mean for a particular adaptation strategy to be feasible? And as we choose among adaptation strategies and adaptation strategies over time, where does the concept of feasibility come in? Because all of these things bear a cost. That cost needs to be fairly distributed among the beneficiaries, and defining that universe, I think, would be helpful in us in choosing how we proceed. There are some other concepts, but I'm going to save those till we get further down in the discussion of next year's effort.
Next in the queue, Ed, hello.
Good morning, everyone, once again. I want to sort of build on the last two comments about getting something done and really making some meaningful progress towards being able to preserve our coastline and also being able to maintain the viability of our coastal communities. And that's a tough one. This is really what we're really all about. This dichotomy of the natural state of the coastline versus the human developed state of the coastline. And it's what the Coastal Act has attempted to grapple with, although it's a bit out of date. In the last 40 years, there's been a huge amount of development, probably two or three times the amount that existed when the Coastal Act was enacted. So we have to deal with that that reality. I believe that the way we deal with that reality is by every community, a goal that every community have a local coastal program that's been vetted and reviewed vis-a-vis the policies of the Coastal Act and local conditions, and getting that community, each community, started on the path towards adapting to sea level rise. To me, that's the broad goal. And I hope that over the next year, we can make as much more progress as we've made in the last year, coming up with a joint statement in getting at some real good examples of how we move forward and addressing some of the thorny issues that are still right there under the table. Getting LCPs now. Our biggest challenge, and I'm speaking from the standpoint of an elected official who's been through two LCP processes and vulnerability assessments, et cetera, and worked with other coastal communities dealing with the same thing. One of the realities here is that we live in a democracy. If we lived in an authoritarian environment, it would be very easy for a set of state-driven policies to be implemented. And if those required all cities to plan for moving away from the coastline with a certain time period, that would be the policy. There would still be the implementation problem because there are costs involved, there's feasibility involved, there's all sorts of other issues, even if we were China, in terms of how to adapt to sea level rise. There would be lots of really practical problems. But we have another problem, another challenge, it's not a problem, and that's that we're a democracy, and we have three levels, local, state, and federal, basically. And at the local level, that's where LCPs get voted on, approved, either through the community review process and workshops or by people voting for the local elected officials who approve LCPs. So there has to be, it built in, baked into everything that we do, there has to be a reconciliation of state and local interests, or we just go nowhere. And that's really what that's the core issue, I think, that we're trying to deal with. If we try to top down everything, there's going to be property rights lawsuits and resistance by local governments and no LCPs or few LCPs really meeting the sort of state solely driven set of criteria. What we need is for every community to have an LCP that makes progress towards adaptation that fits the local requirements, local needs, and local conditions, and is consistent with the Coastal Act. So a lot of education is going to be necessary to educate the coastal voters in the state of California and maybe all of the people in the state of California, because we're going to need money voted on by the legislature to not just plan but implement major adaptations. So the incremental approach that our working group has hammered out really has taken a look at these nuances and challenges and come up with an incremental kind of approach that instead of an all or nothing kind of approach. And it incorporates the strategy of perfect not being the enemy of the good, and having shorter term LCPs where we get something done locally and then redo it as the science evolves and as community understanding and awareness evolves and as the conditions, actual conditions, which is where the threshold approach has a lot of value. People can agree on thresholds locally, and then that's an education process in and of itself. And then when it comes time where certain conditions have changed and there's a need to move to the next level of adaptation, people have already agreed, and it's easier to do it. But if we try to set the bar too high, we don't get the buy-in from our democratically elected local officials, because it's hard to bring people along when they've got to jump over the Grand Canyon as opposed to something that's more manageable. And I think that's really where we are as a working group. I hope we can stick with this this philosophy and this approach and get a lot of progress in every coastal community, so that as a state, we're looking a lot better a few years down the road than we are now in terms of having the ability to manage adaptation to sea level rise in a practical way. Thanks.
Thank you, Councilman Spriggs. We've got several in the queue, and so I know you'll all work to make as much space for conversation as possible. The order right now is Supervisor Leopold, Commissioner Hart, Mayor Waggy, Eric Friedman, and then I've got Donna and Linda as well. Pardon me, I'll use your correct titles as well, just using shorthand. Please, John Leopold.
Thank you. I always learn so much when working in statewide groups, and working with our city council representatives have really helped me understand the challenges that that cities face and as compared to counties. And one of the things, as we look at what we can actually get done this year, is looking at policies that support regional mitigation efforts. Because there's some things that may be hard for Ed's city to do that he could do with the county or some other entity that can help balance the needs. Because I think what we have to do is we have to make progress, and we can talk about how much progress we want to make, but we have to be moving forward. It's going to be important for the commission to understand that local communities are trying to use the best science available, are making progress on addressing climate change and sea level rise, but we're not going to be able to get it all done in our next LCP. We are making significant progress, and I think it's going to be important to have a broad view of what that will look like. For example, Commissioner Urgana, probably butchered that name, sorry, talked about equity and access, right? And so in beaches in the community that I serve, sea level rise will wipe out the beaches. How do we create alternative forms of access? Because just letting managed retreat or unmanaged retreat happen won't give us more beach. So let's think creatively about what that access could look like and how we can do it. We need to work very hard with the governor's office and the legislature to provide funding, because if we're going to start preparing for these things and have policies, we need local communities are going to need resources. And the Coastal Commission could work with the state agencies and state government to condition funding on having an approved LCP or having climate adaptation planning going on to encourage communities to do that. These are things that could be take place. Lastly, one of the things we've talked about in our group is doing some case studies. So commissioners and everyone knows about the local processes that go on. In the community of Santa Cruz, we've done extensive outreach, and we worked very hard and spent 2 years on a process that's going to be coming before you in the coming months. It's going to be hard in the 3 minutes that we have to communicate with you about what that process looks like. But there might be some lessons learned in the process that we went through in terms of community education and outreach and the ways in which we try to take a look at the issue. So I'm hopeful that by continuing to work together, we can make some real progress in the coming year. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Hart.
Thanks so much. And I want to join my fellow commissioners in expressing my gratitude for the time that the working group has spent on this and the excellent ideas that are coming forward. And I know we're all very excited to produce results from these conversations. And I know we all look forward to that. My comment is sort of a combination of a comment and a question. And it really has to do with the need, in my opinion, to integrate our state parks and other major, really primarily state parks into these discussions. Because I think about, well, first of all, that for so many participants here, the chance of adaptation lies in the opportunities to restore and expand coastal marshes and wetlands. And each community, each representative that is here today and along the coast has state parks, generally, I would say, within their district and should be looking to working with the State Parks Department on adaptation plans and sea level rise plans. State Parks has 25% of the California coast under its care, and I just think that they're an essential partner to this conversation. To me, it just seems that I know that this is obviously based on all of our local jurisdictions, but I do think it would be very helpful to have them involved. So that's a question really to our Executive Director Ainsworth and to our staff, whether that's just outside the realm of this conversation or whether that would make sense.
Yeah, through the chair, you know, it's going to be up to the working group who's going to be participating in it. But I concur with you, Commissioner Hart, that State Parks is a critical partner in this because, as you say, many of our jurisdictions have state parks in it. In my own town here in Ventura, we have state parks. You know, I look at the item we dealt with last week, the Capistrano Beach Park there, just up coast. Is you know, Doheny State Beach have the same issues that we were dealing with around erosion of the beach and those facilities. So looking at it in a larger context, and this is this idea expanding out more regionally, and bringing those partners in the working group, we can certainly talk about, you know, we're talking about subgroups and bringing other agencies in to have these discussions to get that integration together. So I think it can be on the table. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Mayor Waggy.
Thank you very much. And Jack mentioned some of the same points I was going to make about our regional approach. Commissioner Hart makes a good point that State Parks has a huge investment in what's going to happen with sea level rise. And that's part of our part and parcel, I think, of our effort to look at the region, not just our individual cities or the counties too, for that matter. But I think from discussions with our county colleagues, I think we're opening our eyes to the possibility of those kinds of regional solutions, because sometimes the city by itself may not be able to accomplish what it would like to for coastal access. And I think the regional approach, bringing in state parks in some way, I'll defer to Jack on how it's going to happen. But I think the other point too is when we move forward next year, we are the policymakers. We're asking what we can get done. I think we're going to be looking at we're going to bring in staff who have some expertise on how to get things done. So we want to start looking forward to transform, as Bruce Gibson mentioned, how do we start getting something done, put it on paper, some policies that will actually be workable. I think that's where the staff can help us translate our desires into concrete action. I would also just like to point out too, it's been touched on several times, this whole phased approach. We can't do everything at once, and we have to look at, see what is actually happening at the time, to look forward whatever period of time to decide what we can get done and how we're going to get it done. So the other thing I'm encouraged, I hear a lot of the same people, a lot of the same messages from public comment commissions and so on, that I think we're pretty close to an agreement on some of the core principles we're trying to achieve here. So thank you very much.
Council Member Friedman.
Thank you very much. I'm real honored to be here and participate in this discussion with all of you.
Most of what's been said is, I'm in concurrence with it, as is our local city. Just a few things to build upon that. I'm on our local sea level rise adaptation plan subcommittee from our city council. And one of the issues, because it came up sort of in our conversation here today, was the issue of equity. And we have a set of guiding principles that we included within our plan. And that was one that we included and made sure to have as a part, as a specific set of our guiding principles. So I think it's important that we all recognize that. And as we build our own local plans, just a couple things to add on is that one is the issue going forward of regional collaboration. I think it serves a benefit for us at our local levels to allow for flexibility. But it also will help you as a coastal commission working with larger regions that allows the flexibility, but you're not looking at one specific city. For example, we have, it was mentioned by my colleague in public comment, Christy Weir from Ventura, an organization called Beacon, the Beach Erosion Authority. And what that is, for those who aren't familiar with it, is that it's a JPA of Ventura and Santa Barbara counties along with our coastal cities. And it extends from Point Conception down to the LA Ventura County line. And we are really using that as a vehicle to share information and look at region-wide approaches. So rather than the city of Santa Barbara focusing on our 6.1 miles of coastline, we're getting that larger picture and we get economies of scale as well. And it would also help the Coastal Commission, because then you might be able to deal with and work with Beacon on looking at these issues. So we get that statewide consistency that we're all looking for from you, but also the flexibility that we have with Beacon. The website for Beacon, for those who want to look it up, is beacon.ca.gov, and I'm happy to talk offline more about it with anybody who's interested in learning more about it. And just as a frame of reference, it was started 30 years ago by a former county supervisor, my first boss, Naomi Schwartz, who was on the Coastal Commission back in the 1970s, and Ventura County Supervisor John Flynn. So it's been a regional collaboration for going on 30 years. The other issues going forward, I think that will be important for us dealing with these, is the issue of trigger points. I think this is where Mariwagi was talking about, is we need to plan for specific levels of sea level rise, but different infrastructure is going to be coming up sooner than others. So trigger points of the actual level on the sea level rise is when we take the action and start planning. For example, if you have a harbor, you have docks that might come up with 0.8 feet of sea level rise where your docks might need to be raised, versus how do we address moving or armoring if we need to, or what the process is for a wastewater treatment plant that's in the coastal zone. So those are much different issues, but we base it on the conditions at the time. And the last thing I'd like to address at this point is that I think we need to address sooner rather than later, and this has come up in our own discussions, is the issue of addressing legal liability for cities and counties on some of these policies, in particular takings issues, because if we have to plan for 6.6 level of feet of sea level rise, there are some serious takings issues. In the city of Santa Barbara, we actually are involved in a takings case that was a coastal bluff that was very interesting, and we presented it. So I think that's an issue that next year we should really explore, because if we can address that properly, we can really give ourselves more options and more duration on what we need to do. So, thank you.
Commissioner Brownsey.
Thank you, Kaylin. I just, of course, want to join with the other commissioners in my thanks to not only their work and the staff work on this issue, but the local government officials. I want to say that, you know, I do believe this work is really important. It was great news to hear from Commissioner Gold, Deputy Secretary Gold, about the funding, because I think that's a critical issue in terms of effectuating action on these issues. You know, I came to this meeting kind of filled with dread and with hope. Dread because, given the experience we've all had with COVID in the last year, with a fast-moving crisis, that was politicized, even though the science and the public health reality was so clear, and the consequences of inaction were directly related to increased fatalities. And here with sea level rise, you know, we're dealing with a slow-moving crisis fast-moving in specific cases, but overall slow-moving crisis. But it's a crisis nonetheless. It's going to be politicized. It is politicized. That's not widely understood by most of the people who live in the coastal areas. That's been our experience every month. And that the impacts are so substantial and so complex. We deal with it every single month, you know, at the commission. And so I think the thing that's what I dread could be the pathway here. What I'm hoping is that, as my colleague, Commissioner Almanzada, and others have said, is that we really move to action this year. I would just point out that I think that we need to move from conflict to collaborative decision-making. And I think that's what the purpose of this local government working group is. And I think that politically, this working group, as they move forward, I think needs to signal to other interested parties in the regional and the state space that there is this strong collaboration and agreement around some core principles. I think we all agree that we need to prioritize short and long-term projects, including fiscal analysis, which show the cost of addressing the sea level rise consequences, not only in the future, but the consequences if we don't address them on a reasonable timeline. And, you know, I hope that, and one thing I would like to suggest to the working group is, I feel like the issues of the planning, the local coastal plans, and all the planning that goes around that should be foundational, should be baseline, that you don't need to spend that much time on it. It should be widely accepted and really move to a situation where, just a second. Sorry about that. I had a spousal interruption there. And that there should be focus on perhaps this group identifying specific projects that perhaps would be a good model for mitigation, would be a good model for adaptation strategies, natural adaptation strategies that addresses a complex public infrastructure issue that looks at the options when looking at local parks or regional parks, state parks, and beaches, that looks at, so that it becomes, and I know that there are information and data banks in different state entities that can provide some examples, but I think what it would be most helpful for, I think, the various communities up and down the state is to see that there are successful projects and to see the complexity and see the problem solving, but also see how much time and energy it takes, because I think that's going to be one of the foundational challenges. But my final comment is, I just want to say that for the purposes of solving this issue, and the thing that gives me hope is if we can, the commission and the local government officials can strongly signal to those other stakeholders that there is true collaboration, true sharing of technical and decision-making to achieve the best that can be hoped for. in these coastal communities to protect access, to protect the beaches and the ecosystems, to actively protect and enhance the environmental justice communities in this process and the unique characteristics of our coastal communities. So I just throw that as a lot on the table, but those are just my thoughts. And of course, I wish you all the best.
Thank you, Commissioner. Supervisor Hopkins.
Thank you so much. And, you know, I just wanted to start off by acknowledging the comments of many of the commissioners that just, you know, made my heart beat a little bit faster because it was things that I very much agree with. I want to thank Commissioner Aranga for his comments about equity, Commissioner Amanzada for focusing on action, you know, rather than just this sort of sometimes feel like we're in perennial, you know, development mode, and trying to actually get things across the finish line is very exciting. And I also wanted to thank Commissioner Hart for recognizing the fact that I think that state parks should really be part in some way, shape, or form of the working group going forward, because they play a critical role and certainly a huge stakeholder in my neck of the woods up here. I also wanted to thank Commissioner Brownsey for just her beautiful statement about shifting from conflict into collaboration, because I really feel that we are on that cusp right now, and we have an opportunity to meaningfully jump off into some new and exciting places next year. One possible action that I want to propose is the shared pursuit of state funding to address sea level rise. You know, at the end of the day, I think everyone in local government will tell you that there is so much we would love to do, but we are perennially broke, and it's not helping actually that the federal stimulus, I was just texting one of our federal representatives earlier this morning, looks like it's going to be leaving state and local governments high and dry this time around. So that's not going to help us either. And yet I think that there are a couple of key opportunities. One is the resilience bond, which has been reactivated, had been kind of shelved for the pandemic, but it's very much in play and under development right now. I think it's pretty safe to say that if we brought together coastal commissioners, mayors, and supervisors, we're a fairly well-connected group of people. And I think that if we all linked arms to try to advance funding for sea level rise through that initiative, I think that we would make a pretty effective lobbying effort. I also think that we would be leveraging the governor's 30 by 30 commitment, and that there's a huge, you know, opportunity to really look at that along the coast of California. Another thing that I want to mention, which is a state agency that we haven't really interacted with yet through the working group, is Caltrans. They have played a key role in providing mitigation funding in a number of projects, including one in my county, and I believe that Supervisor Gibson benefited from that as well. And honestly, without the help and the support of Coastal Commission staff, I don't think we would have gotten there, at least in Sonoma County. So I'm really grateful for the role, the liaison role that the Coastal Commission has sometimes played between local governments and Caltrans. You know, I think that there's an opportunity, if you look at Caltrans as a potential kind of mitigation arm, to assist with the transition from failing infrastructure into investing in ecological or natural infrastructure. And so when we're talking about things like, you know, moving Highway 1 back and then trying to reclaim space, whether it's for, you know, coastal prairie, bluffs, or wetlands, there's an opportunity to make that transition through mitigation measures. And maybe that's something that the Resiliency Bond or some other pot of funding could also support. So anyways, I hope that we can all consider some way of working together to try to secure funding, because I'm sure that we would all love to see more of these natural restoration projects get across the finish line. And then it feels like we could start, you know, chalking some marks up on the wall of hopefully some victories and some positive projects that we could work on and collaborate on together.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Escalante.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry, I have technical difficulties here. I appreciate this opportunity, and I want to say that I echo my fellow commissioners. You know, there's been so many of you that have spoken up right now, but Wilson, Groom, Amanzada, and Brownsey, I think I align myself very much with what you all have said. I also appreciate what Sonoma County Supervisor Hopkins has said. All of it rang very true for me, and I do appreciate that we have had this process, and it's has been slowly getting better and better. So much gratitude to all, and including the public for all of their input. And for me, like Commissioner Uranga, the equity issue is a top of mind, and it's, you know, it's comes up on almost everything that we decide on and we discuss. And I am from inland LA County, and I have always worked in the coastal zone. So for me, the loss of beaches, armor development is sort of an unbearable cost to Californians. And you know, most Californians will never be able to live on the coast. And but all of us can set our foot in the sandy beaches. So access to nature for me, and as we can see, Commissioner Gold has mentioned, for the administration is a huge priority. Access to nature for all is, for me, a basic human right that should be protected as much as clean and safe drinking water and air. So I agree with the FL commissioners, and in 2021, we should move forward some actions and some measurable progress that we do together, definitely around funding. I think it's absolutely imperative, and we will have that opportunity, not just around the bond discussion, but also around some legislation. And also, you know, to work closely with the administration, as we see, we have a friendly partner there to advance some of these conversations, including what I find to be one of the most essential pieces, which will be the public education aspect of all of this and the conversation with the public. So, you know, I guess at the end of my questions, you know, something that I would like to hear, if it's possible, from our partners is what type of, what have we learned thus far about these conversations with the, so, you know, the coastal stakeholders about the reality of sea level rise, the projections, you know, around their coast, the impacts of not just sort of their homes or their infrastructure or whatever development is under threat. Sort of what those, so far, maybe that's one of the things that we can measure progress on. You know, we can, I'd love to hear next year some examples of what this conversations or these efforts have been done. Of course, also with an equity lens, meaning not just sort of the stakeholders, you know, that have that most immediate to lose, but also those of us who, you know, depend on this public trust. So I think the LA Times has been doing great work thus far, but I think that, you know, there needs to be a lot more amplification and discussion of this. One of the most important things from all of this, I think, is 2% to the public that this is, we're facing a very clear and present danger, that even though in some places it might be a slowly occurring coming problem, as we see in the Coastal Commission every month, you know, it is very real and very present to us up and down the coast. So I think that being very truthful about the urgency of this crisis is important, and that we do fight back against this narrative, which is a false narrative, you know, that this is somehow a battle between communist environmentalists that want to take the land of, you know, greedy oligarchs at the coast. I don't think it's, the reality is that this is a problem for all of us, California, and we have a stake, all of us in the game, that, and our mandate is that, you know, we have to protect the public trust, and we want to make sure that we have a future that's resilient and that we have a good chance at survival, and not just that, but to thrive, you know, in that it's equitable. So I'll drop the mic with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Groom.
Oh, thank you. Commissioner Escalante beat me to it, but I do think there's a need for a public education campaign of some sort. And worked into many of our decisions. A lot of, even a gloss, for instance, one of the things I think we need is a glossary of definitions. As we are all around talking to people, people have different ideas, they have different definitions, they have different thoughts about the depth of this issue or the lack of depth of this issue. And I know that we're all staff limited, but I think if we could come up with some basic educational tenets and work with the public on them, we might get a little bit, we might have a little more ability to bring more people into this. Sometimes I think people think it's just those of us who are, you know, working on the coast or elected and holding some job, that we're the ones that are worried about this, but we all need to be worried about it. So I'd like to suggest that somehow, and maybe it's through the park system, Carol, but somehow we come up with some education tenets that can then be developed and distributed. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Rice.
Yeah, good morning. And thank you, Kaylin, for so nicely handling, moderating and taking care of us through this meeting. I want to, I'm not going to repeat many of the comments that were made. In fact, I don't think there's a comment that has been made by a commissioner or member of the working group that I don't agree with. I think I just wanted to focus in two areas, which I think could be emphasized or maybe haven't been spoken to as directly. And I want to refer my fellow commissioners back to a commission meeting back in November, I believe, of 2019 at Oceana Dunes, when we had a sea level rise adaptation presentation that really resonated for me. It really marched through sort of this phased planning approach, which of course had a big feasibility element built into it. And to me, I that stuck with me in terms of then my allegiance, I can't help it, and sensitivity to the planning, the planners among our local jurisdictions who are having to carry and do the work to try to do LCP amendments, work both with constituents, with the coastal staff and commission. And it's such a struggle trying to bridge the gap between where we are today, where we may be way down the road, feasibility, cost, and bringing everybody on board at the same time to actually be able to produce an LCP update that makes sense and addresses what we need to address. So I guess my request for something to focus on in the upcoming year is how can we support, in addition to those funding grant, planning grants, maybe going after more money and funding to help with some key model pilot projects that can be shared, sharing resources, information. How do we support the planners at the local LCP planning level so they're, one, not working in isolation, that they're sharing best practices, and that they're really actually working at the staff level with Coastal Commission staff to try to integrate these shared principles that we've agreed on, adopted into their LCP updates and planning processes. And then key to that, I think, is I believe we need to embrace and find a way to create the tools and mechanisms to build in this feasibility assessment and phased approach planning, which is very easy to see as necessary on huge infrastructure projects. And I'm not sure how it plays out at the local private property level with a private project. But those are my observations, thoughts, comments, and if they may, hope they made sense. And I look forward to the rest of the morning.
Thank you. Commissioner Amanzada.
Yes, thank you. I realized that I sort of threw down the charge to everybody to offer specific ideas for the coming year, but I didn't share any of my own. So I'll just very briefly offer a couple of things that I've been thinking about. One is sort of picks up on what Supervisor Spriggs said, which is that we need to partner around education and outreach. And I would put a finer point on it, which is that I believe that we need to really have a targeted effort towards homeowners and property owners in the coastal zone. I know that CAL FIRE provides maps and I believe notification of homeowners that are in high danger fire areas. But part of, I think, the dynamic that we're all experiencing and that which we often experience with the real estate community is a lack of sort of shared recognition of the science and the projections. And so the Ocean Protection Council and the Ocean Science Trust provide new updates about expected sea level rise and inundation every other year. And I think that this is information that should be shared regularly with homeowners, as well as some of the basic information about not only coastal access requirements, which I think our enforcement team would support, but also just the guidelines around what we want to see in terms of adaptation. I think that that could make a huge difference in sort of dissolving some of the us versus them, the conflict that Commissioner Brownsey described, and really bring us all to the same page of, you know, advance notice of what we know is going to happen in certain areas and a shared sense of what the tools are to address those. We've also heard from Commissioner Hart and others about the opportunities in state parks. And so some focused effort in the coming year there, not only in state parks, but in other open space areas to look at the opportunities to meet the governor's 30% conservation by 2030 mandate would be fantastic. We've been talking to Heal the Bay and others about the potential to remove barriers in state parks and how that could help sediment flows. I mean, there are a number of nature-based adaptation strategies that we can look at within our own state lands. So those are, I guess, are two things that I would throw out there that I'm really interested in working on in the coming year. I'd love to hear other ideas, and I'd love a partnership from any local partners or other commissioners on those or other ideas. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Uranga.
Thank you, Chip Lee, and excellent conversations. Really appreciated. But we have to look at the big picture here, and the big picture is climate change. And I think we really haven't adapted to that and considered that as of course, a motivating factor as to why we're having issues with our beaches. And I think that it might be a little premature at this point, but I think we need to expand this conversation to deal with the whole issue about climate change and getting our freeways clear from here in Long Beach this is where I'm coming from, is that, you know, we have a big port, a big port complex with LA and combined being one of the largest in the world. And we have a lot of issues in our highways, so our 710 freeway, Long Beach Freeway, and the 405, and a lot of truck traffic going around out there and dirtying and polluting our air and consequently polluting everything else that goes around it. So I think we need to expand the message that climate change affects our beaches and affects what's going on with the sea level rise and the warming of our globe. And we need to expand and get more involved statewide and nationally with the whole issue about climate change and how it affects our coastal communities. I'm just throwing that out there as something that we need to look at. We do have a lot on our plate, so we probably will need to focus on a couple of projects specifically to have some successes. Otherwise, we'll be hitting against the wall every time, and we won't be seen as successful in our efforts until we get a few successes behind us so that we can grow on those and expand on them. So just a few random thoughts, if you will.
Thank you. Commissioner Wilson.
Thanks. I'll try not to hit on too many things that people have done before. And again, you're doing a great job, Caitlin, on this managing this. I just wanted to remind us that, as Linda Hopkins has said in the past, you know, the only option to, if you're not going to do managed retreat, then all it is unmanaged retreat in some regards for most of the state. And so, and I also just kind of want to touch on sort of the tension that we have talked about with regards to the private entities, with regards to private property owners and the state in this issue, because a lot of what we're talking about, linking arms with relationship to funding for regional planning and those sorts of things, you know, the if we're asking taxpayers and we're asking the state as a whole to be helpful in providing funding for these regional planning things, we really have to be clear about how those efforts protect the public trust, you know, resources, the public trust access and equity in that process. And we just can't have sole focus, you know, pinned down to on a point by point, property owner by property owner basis. And I think it's going to be really important. And when we talk about phased approach, you know, those phased approach have long-term processes to them and will require long-term financial burdens that have to be dealt with both at the state level and locally. And if we're supposed to do that in partnership, we have to be realistic about that and explain very clearly in these processes what the benefit is to the entire state and not just to local jurisdictions, of which I'm a local jurisdictional representative, right? And so I completely understand that. And so that's why, you know, we've been talking about more and more of these collaborations and even functionally making them more established through local joint powers authorities or hazard districts or those sorts of things. I just want to make sure that we're keeping that in mind as we look at these things, because we've been focusing mostly on project by project a lot in our brains. That's where the conflicts always come up. And so, you know, emotionally, that's where we're at a lot of times, but the hard work is going to be in these sort of regional adaptations. This is where we get our mitigations. This is where we actually find resilience. And again, it's going to have to be in partnership, and we're going to have to really explain to all of the state why we need to focus resources in these spaces and why it's good for beach goers from Fresno to, you know, to Mono County to, you know, and anywhere inland, what's their stake in this, as well as neighborhoods nearby that, you know, need access to the beach that are within them are more populated areas. And so that's the point I want to make today.
Thank you. Let's hear from Supervisor Gibson, and then I have a check-in that we can do.
Hey.
And Chair Padilla wants in as well. Please, Supervisor Gibson.
Thanks, Kaylin. Let me first endorse the comments on the need for public education. I think that's going to help all of us as we move forward. And certainly the question about the fate of our beaches is one that it resonates very strongly with folks all up and down the coast and all through California and far, far beyond. And I think we need to consider the fate of our beaches, if we do something about sea level rise adaptation or we don't do anything about sea level rise adaptation. And that leads me to think about some groups that I think would be useful to bring into the conversations with the working group. The first one is the California Coastal Sediment Management Work Group. And I know some of the planning professionals up and down the coast know of this. This is a group spearheaded by the Army Corps of Engineers and many other public agencies that really, since 1999, as I understand it, has now completed a study of sediment sources, fates, dynamics, all up and down the coast. San Luis Obispo County did theirs in 2016. And so this is a body of information I think that's really pertinent to understanding the fate of our beaches on the one hand, but also as we look at nature-based solutions. I think that understanding the dynamics of sediment, if we armor or don't armor, what's going to happen to the beach? It's going to allow us to expand our vision, I think, of public access. Another group that's come up in the conversation today is the JPA Beacon down in Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. And what I think they're useful is we have a regional model there. We have two counties and several cities that are involved in that, specifically about beach erosion. I think they're really pertinent to the conversation. And then also coming up in comment in some of the written submissions today, I'm struck by Marin County, obviously a beautiful place, almost as beautiful as San Luis Obispo. But it has a particular variety of situations that I think would be useful for us to study, both, beaches open to the ocean, the incredible Tomales Bay, and all the situations up and down there. And I think as we look at case studies, that would be a place where we could really, in a fairly concentrated area and within a single jurisdiction, look at, you know, local variations from one point to another. You know, again, I won't belabor, but I think there are other concepts. Councilmember Friedman brought up public trust doctrine and issues surrounding takings. I think that's one that we do have to wrestle with. Supervisor Leopold brought up the question of what does coastal access look like beyond the question of just beaches? all of those things, I think, are ripe for discussion by the working group. And if we can come to some common understanding on vision and approach on that, I think that will help move our conversation forward to actually seeing adaptation get done in a way that will benefit all Californians.
Thank you, Bruce. Chair Padilla.
Thanks. Thanks, Galen. I want to echo everybody's sentiment that for your work in facilitating this conversation and express my gratitude again to everybody who's participated in the working group in outlining, you know, principles and suggested actually some very policy or specific actions that could be undertaken in the coming year. And I want to really echo the sentiments that it's time to move to trying to articulate and identify specific, perhaps regional pilot projects, perhaps a agreement about a statewide assessment of degrees of vulnerability and how we prioritize a particular area. I know that's antithetical to a lot of the parochial nature of local and regional governments and trying to balance priorities. But I would suggest that a potential specific action is getting to that refreshed assessment with an eye towards some kind of a potential demonstration project, maybe around public infrastructure that is has very discrete parameters, that you're not taking the whole elephant at once, but you're taking something that can be modeled both in terms of the process and the outcome. And to resurrect some of the efforts that were underway over a year ago around potential financing mechanisms before COVID hit to achieve some specific mitigation, adaptation around infrastructure that can begin to be a model for how you can, both from a process and outcome standpoint, achieve actual action around adaptation. I really want to echo the ideas that certainly that Commissioner Amanzada pushed around the need for public education and interaction with key stakeholders in a real meaningful way in trying to identify specific modalities around that, because the constant barrier we run into, in addition to the structure under which we operate, which I'll get to in a second, is really a lack of effective communication and understanding about what adaptation really means and what the impacts are of unsuccessful adaptation or a lack of any. And I think that that is another discrete, specific, tangible type of program that perhaps we could jointly put some definition around, advocate for, and secure support for, and then actually facilitate content. And I think part of that has to be really dealing with just being blunt, particularly with all stakeholders in the coastal zone of California, about what failure looks like, not as a scare tactic, but to understand that this isn't just about, you know, some environmental crusade. This is about protecting resources, access, really addressing inequities. It's a public health issue if there's a failure, adaptation impacts. And of course, economic. For those that may not care about the first couple, they should certainly care about the third. Imagine the economy of California with vastly reduced or non-existent beaches. What would that do to the key element of California's economy? So I think there's some real specific steps potentially, and I'm grateful to sort of this framework that's been put together and an agreement that's been hammered out with the local stakeholders. And I really want to add my voice to that. I want to also echo Commissioner Hart's really good point about bringing in state parks as a key statewide stakeholder. Obviously, probably should have done that a lot earlier, but that's a really, I think, spot on suggestion. So having said that, again, my gratitude for the work that was done and total endorsement of the adopted shared principles and potential actions that can be taken here. And one last thing, you know, one of the things that we deal with in looking strategically more broadly at the bigger dynamic around how do we really deal with moving some kind of actual adaptation implementing steps to happen, and the financial, but also legal. There's probably, and we've had this discussion before, you know, some necessary legislative work here too, on a more macro scale that hasn't been attempted because of the sensitivity around it. But I think that needs to be part of the specific conversation, set of actions as we move forward as well. So having said that, That's my two cents, and I'll hand it back over to you.
Thank you. My plan is to wrap this session and then check in on the agenda and see how we want to treat the next one. And here's how I'll do that very briefly. Even though you all just provided excellent summaries of where we are and reinforce each other's messages, I can't help it. Megan and I are here to help this group plan for and then manage and track discussions over the year. And here are the themes that we will be using to guide us, that all planning and projects should be through a lens, should include a solid look with equity and social justice in mind, what that means for access and for different communities. And of course, that means reaching to different communities to actually have those conversations. That's not done from a desk. That feasibility is an important part of upcoming conversations as we think about different adaptation planning and strategies. And that includes thinking about funding and legal frameworks and political will. And we'll get to more of that in a sec. You all have very much highlighted and are on the same page about the urgency and the need to act now to avoid unmanaged retreat, but really time to get down to business. Many comments reinforce about working with state parks and other critical partners such as Caltrans, especially on due to how much big public infrastructure they have on the coast. This is, of course, a focus of the Natural Resource Agency, and we can leverage other efforts like 3030 and cutting the green tape and others, AB 1282. Many of you have highlighted that the regional approaches, this isn't just for convenience or really better projects can come from regional approaches because it gives you more options to move things around and be thoughtful and time things and fund things. So regional approaches is not just for flexibility. It's actually for better economic and environmental outcomes and community outcomes. A very difficult but necessary and conversation that we'll all be having for as long as we have them, conversations about triggers, thresholds, phased approach, recognizing that some infrastructure is facing things sooner than others, and that the rates of sea level rise are rising in different places. Okay, so here was a big part of your conversations, and there were two really big themes when it comes to community education and general education so that we as California are getting on the same page. The two themes were, it's important to meet people where they are because if you try to force things too early, it can be counterproductive to the entire effort, to everything that we're trying to do to advance the conversations, to do good planning, to do phase planning, to do regional and adaptive approaches. If you can't meet people where they are, you can actually set things back. However, that doesn't mean that we throw our hands up in the air and say, oh, it's too hard or the political will isn't here. I heard everybody say that we all need to be together on public education, advancing discussion, common messages together, focusing on the implications and the consequences, not as a fear tactic, but to really highlight what's going on. Similar theme about moving from conflict to collaboration, that's actually on all of us. If we go together to seek funding, we can likely be more effective. Would be great, this was a specific quest for this working group in terms of really working to consolidate lessons learned from some of the communities that we heard about today and others. Maybe a year from now, we can be building a catalog of those lessons learned. And more than that, can we advance and get more specific with some of this by funding and pilot or case studies that really help planners that are on the front lines learn, adapt, try these new principles? Commissioner Uranga reminds us to think about ultimate drivers and that there are bigger drivers here that are affecting us on sea level rise and floods and fire, and that we have to do near-term mitigation and let's not lose sight to the bigger things so that we can discuss that in its appropriate context and make that a part of the understanding and education. I already mentioned this. Oh, no, this is slightly different. If we're to achieve equity and also to be successful in funding efforts now and going forward, a big part of that is telling the story of about accountability and how it serves California. So when thinking about JPAs and public-private partnerships and special districts, really telling the story about how the money will be used and who it benefits and why is will be essential for all of that, now and going forward. And we have at least one example highlighted that people would like to look at the beacon. Access means more than just beaches, and beaches are under threat from more than just sea level rise. So let's look at what that really means for access. Statewide assessment, we acknowledge the tension, that there is a tension between doing a statewide vulnerability assessment and locally focused solutions, but that there's wisdom in both, that the promise of a better understanding of timing, vulnerability, et cetera, while very loaded and very difficult place to start conversations with the public, is important for more informed discussions about priority, where to act first, where to allocate funds. And then I didn't highlight this one correctly. I was typing just as Commissioner Padilla was finishing, but that in the background, we should be thinking about legislative work. And as we collect really valuable lessons learned that could change structural impediments, funding impediments, otherwise to making advancements, that we think about legislative solutions to that. What a great list. If I did not cover your topic or a really important topic, you are welcome to shoot the messenger. There are lots of important key themes here I'll just say our work is cut out for us. This is very difficult. Thank you for a very good discussion. I'm going to stop sharing and let's check in with how we'd like to spend the rest of our time. Our next piece on the agenda was to either take a break and then come back, or if you prefer to go right into this discussion and finish a little bit earlier, was to reflect on any observations that we want to make now about membership focus, implications for the working group in the coming year. I do want to say, as the facilitator, it is in those discussions where we have the time, the membership, the agenda developed to really get into the weeds and develop a work plan and really hammer some things out. And so I don't think the intent of this discussion is to draw a work plan together by committee real time for that group, but instead high level observations about what does this mean for the working group? Lessons learned that we've had from the working group in the past, what it means for us working together in the coming year. A lot of that was covered in the discussion we just had. So I'm asking, I guess, two questions, and I'll stop and I'll turn it back to Chair Padilla. Would you like to take a break? And how much would you like to engage in session 7 on the agenda about looking forward for the planning group? Because some of that might have been covered in our past discussion, and you may want to close earlier. So, Chair, I'm done, but I'm here, and I'll hand it back to you for the moment to help the group decide whether we take a break and what we do next.
Thanks very much, Galen. Is there a desire by the group to soldier on here, or do we need to take a break? I'm not sure if that was take a break or soldier through.
Let's soldier it through.
I vote soldier through.
All right, we are intrepid, this group, and we are determined.
Especially if we could end early.
All right, we will soldier on. Galen.
I think we can, and I just teed up the topic, but really this is a chance for an open floor for observations, comments or guidance to the working group or members of the working group reflecting on what we've heard today and what you think that means for our work in the coming year. That was probably too many questions. Please, let me open the floor again. We'll manage the conversation the same way. Commissioner Hart, you're up.
Thanks so much. I mean, what kept coming to mind as we're talking about working on these broad initiatives is what we're confronting every meeting, every month, which is projects that are impacting, projects that involve seawalls, projects that require us to tell homeowners, park landowners, and others that they are not going to be able to erect these kind of devices that are going to impact our beaches. And so my concern is that how do we conduct our education campaign, come up with regional solutions at the same time that we're dealing in these very controversial monthly challenges? Should we, for example, take the easiest path, try to look at where are the most straightforward things that we could do in a regional area where there's not a lot of development? And I'm thinking about, you know, the North Coast as being the least developed. Should we dig in the areas where it's the hardest? But I think it's just important to acknowledge that this is a constant, you know, monthly challenge that we have. So we don't have the benefit of planning, and I think you get the gist of what I'm saying. So I think that's worth talking about.
Commissioner Odenga is next. And I was reminded in the background by a working group member that if you have an idea along these lines, a thought to what can be done in the next year, given that this is our group, who we have, and that a year goes way too quickly. Any comments along those lines are welcome. But of course, take it where you need to. Commissioner, please go right ahead.
Thank you for that reminder. I think we need to continue, obviously, working with this group. But in terms of my own organization that I represent here today, Coastal Commission, I think that we also need to reach out and start looking at building stronger relationships and partnerships with our other agencies, state parks, state lands, Army Corps of Engineers, which would require us as a Coastal Commission to set up meetings with them individually, perhaps, or maybe in another collaborative type of way, to talk about some of those impacts that we're having that affect them as well, and we need their assistance and their guidance as we move through this sea level rise impact. And perhaps that would be an idea that the other organizations can look at it as well. So the League of Cities, the Beach Cities Caucus, which I also am a member of, and perhaps the CSAC as well, might want to look at how they can build relationships and collaborations with all these other agencies as well, since especially those counties along up and down the coast. So just throwing that out there as an idea that we might want to look at. Of course, it would require our own individual organizations to make time, which is very valuable at this point. But given the COVID and the pandemic and the opportunity for Zoom meetings, it doesn't take a whole lot of travel, at least for some of us, and hopefully we will be able to make some of these meetings virtual, so that it'd be a lot easier. And we might also want to look at consideration now, Jack, if you want to chime in on this, is also presenting more webinars in response to making these types of discussions more available to the general public, and for them to know what it is that what we are doing as not only a working group, but also as what we're doing in, as our agencies are moving forward with this type of adaptation plan, especially when we're looking at building some resilience for our coast. So those are my comments for now. Thank you.
Jack, would you like a moment?
Well, that's a lot to take in. My initial thought of all this is no pressure, right? So I think about, you know, most of my job today is managing expectations, I feel. And it's important, you know, I really embrace this idea of, you know, coming with really actionable items going forward because it's needed and with a sense of urgency. That is really what we need. At the same time, the list of things we have is really super ambitious. And I think we do have to manage our expectations a bit, you're really trying to focus in on those most high priority items. And that's going to be, I think, the job of the working group to figure out how do we take all these ideas and put them in and focus and prioritize the ones that are most important. And, you know, I've been thinking about, you know, how do we check back in with everybody? Because, the working group is working off by itself over a year. And I think maybe a check-in at mid-year may be appropriate so we can all sort of have another, just progress report and going forward. So, and the idea of, you know, I think around public education, you know, we've been working with the OPC on an education program right now. It's because they have the funding to do this at more high level education program around Sea Level Rise, which they've developed and are gearing up to roll out. Commissioner Amanzada and Commissioner Brownsey, we've talked about a much more focused education program geared towards local governments along the coastline around these really sticky issues. So we're going to continue to do that. The continued collaboration with our agency partners is ongoing across many agencies. For example, we have a public trust project where, you know, how sea level rise is going to affect our public trust lands along with shoreline armoring with the State Lands Commission. We had a federal grant to do that, and we'll be coming out with guidelines within the next 6 months on that effort. So I'm rambling a bit. There's a lot to take in here, but I so much appreciate all the great ideas. And so thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Briggs.
Okay, thank you very much. I really am happy to hear what Jack just said, because having been blessed with a long life and working with a lot of different institutions and organizations, one of the things we have to be aware of as a working group is trying to take on too much beyond what we're really have a comparative advantage to do. It's called mission creep. Every single idea that has been suggested here is valuable. Every single one of them is on point from a person who knows and is dedicated and committed to moving this whole process forward. The working group was formed primarily to address and resolve key areas of friction between the state regulatory body, the Coastal Commission, and local governments in terms of the jurisdictional challenge of who's in charge of coastal land use management, and addressing those conflicts in a way that results in a peaceful, constructive process that benefits the state of California. That dynamic, that relationship between the primary state regulatory body and the local jurisdictions that have to implement coastal land use policies, remains to me at the core of how we succeed in the state of California in managing our coastal resources for the benefit of all. And if we get too far beyond that, that dynamic, that relationship, and because it has all of these issues, all these key issues in it, in that relationship. Yes, there are other entities, many of them, including local organizations and coalitions, et cetera, that are, you know, have a lot to offer and can weigh in and should. But that core relationship between these organizations that have land use authority that needs to be reconciled when it comes to addressing sea level rise and coastal management, that's really where we need to continue to improve that relationship, or the rest of it isn't going to really matter that much. So that's all I really wanted to say about that we need to keep in mind in terms of all the things that we want to do and to try to cram into the next year for the working group. Quickly on the question of education, one of the tried and true things we have found in education in Imperial Beach, which is a sea level rise threatened municipality as a whole, not just part of it, but all of it, or most of it, is to meet people where they are in terms of their common experiences. We can talk about flooding, inundation, El Nino, king tides, those impacts on the community as a starting point to address, well, what's, if we extrapolate a few years into the future, the frequency and amplitude of these events going to increase, and people can begin to get their imaginations, which is where we start as human beings, around that. So I would just urge that when we start talking about community education, that we really look at it in a very practical, experiential way, because that's where my electorate is, and I would suspect that most of our electorates, those of us who are elected officials and have to vote on these things, are as well. So thank you, Nat. Those were my comments.
Thank you. Commissioner Brownsey, please.
Thank you, Kalen. I want to agree with Ed Spriggs in terms of the mission, for sure, of the working group. I agreed with everything he said. And so I think that how I think about the mission, if I were to, and I'm, in my recommendation to you, is that the core of the working group is collaboration. And I think that given the importance of this issue and given the short and the long term of this issue, that it would be my hope that the group could send a letter to the governor and to the state legislature and to other state officials stating this deep collaboration on these issues and the need for close collaboration between state and local partners to address this most challenging of issues, sea level rise. So I think that that could be one objective that this working group could achieve. With respect to the other issues, which are the other issues that myself and other commissioners and the local government officials articulated, to me, I think it's just super important to be realistic in terms of what is possible. I think there can be aspirational goals, but I think that when we come back a year from now, I'm really hopeful that there could be specifics. For instance, along with that letter to state officials, I think that this working group could then make the case for why additional funding is so important and the purposes for which it would be utilized. And, you know, to have that as part of the public education campaign, which is truly the core purpose of this group. And that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. We have plenty of time, and there is a possibility of finishing at the half hour. We have three in the queue and an opportunity for more if you need it. Supervisor Leopold, please.
Thank you, Kaylin. There's a lot of agreement with the remarks. On the question of education, I just want you to know that one of the things that has been great about the working group is its size, its nimbleness to be able to work on issues, and then its ability to reach out to our different groups, whether it be the coastal group with the counties or the coastal group with the cities, that has gone on and that can continue. When it comes to the educational efforts to reach the public, there's probably going to be more success looking at what is available in terms of state agencies' resources to make that happen. Because at least some of us in our own communities, we're trying to do the communication, but hearing about suggested something like an assessment document or just a mailer, just in the same way that CAL FIRE reaches out to members of the public about fire hazards, that would be certainly helpful, but that's probably coming from a state agency rather than the working group. But we're going to continue to share the information, and I'm sure that Commissioners Groom and Wilson share to a certain extent what's happening with the group as well. I do think that it will be useful for us to do some case studies about what has worked or what are the challenges or what are some of the possible solutions. It was suggested up in Marin County. We've looked at some things in Santa Cruz County. We've looked at a number of different case study areas that might provide us some tools and policy choices that could be used by the commission and look at and how they look at projects. And I'm not exactly sure how quickly we could get that done, but that provides some opportunity to share some information. Lastly, I think that what we could accomplish in, let's say in the next 6 months, is a joint statement from with the working group and our various constituencies and the commission about the need for funding and the resiliency bond that's currently under contemplation. My colleague, Supervisor Hopkins, mentioned that the joining together of mayors and supervisors and commissioners are a powerful force, and I agree with her in that regard. And we know that this planning is going on now, and we might want to get to the front, and coming together collectively is a powerful force, and that may be something that we can get done in the near term. So thank you.
Mayor Wage.
Thank you very much. And I have to confess, when people are talking about Marin, I moved down here from Marin County. I used to ride my bicycle in West Marin. It's a beautiful area and deserves a lot of attention. I think Supervisor Leopold said a lot of what I was going to say, and also Councilmember Ed Spriggs. I think the size of our working group has worked such that we've worked very well together. We've been collaborative. And clearly, we do need to bring in the experts. Supervisor Gibson mentioned the sedimentary sedimentation working group. I think those are the kinds of expertise we need to plug in to our efforts to understand what kinds of things we can get done from a scientific, from an engineering standpoint to address these very difficult issues. So I think we need to plug in that expertise. With respect to parks too, state parks, I think we can work with Jack on how to best plug them in at some point. But I think the size of the working group is suitable right now. As I mentioned, we do need to bring in the planners to help translate what our desires are into more concrete foundational ways of coming up with the solutions we're looking for. And I think, again, I'm very pleased to hear what we've talked about today. I'm looking forward to getting started at this point. So I just want to thank everyone's contributions.
Bruce.
Thank you.
Supervisor Gibson, please.
Yeah, Bruce. At this after lunch, it's Bruce. Let me endorse the idea that the working group would like to widen its efforts and bring in some technical experts, planners, scientific technical expertise like those knowledgeable about sediments. I think we could possibly envision a group meeting occasionally that isn't the core group of elected officials that comprise the working group itself. So I think that could be productive for us to synthesize information that would be important. I think the other thing that the working group is really interested in is opening up channels of communication with all the state agencies that are involved in sea level rise adaptation. Mr. Ainsworth mentioned, work between the Coastal Commission and the State Lands Commission on questions of public trust doctrine. That's something that very much would inform the efforts of the working group. And I think that local jurisdictions would very much like to be actively involved with state agencies, whether as observers. We'd like to know what's going on. As reflected in the state developed principles, local jurisdictions are the implementation arms, and we would like to be there as these ideas are developed. And finally, I do think the working group is about the right size under Kaylin's expert facilitation with help from Ms. Wiley. We've done some really good stuff. I would like to thank and salute my colleague, Supervisor Leopold, who will be leaving the county delegation with this meeting. John has provided a tremendous amount of insight. He's been right in the midst of the development of a local coastal program update for this county of Santa Cruz that's coming before your commission here shortly. It's got some very innovative thinking in it. We're certainly going to miss him in the day-to-day actions of the working group, but hope that he remains our friend and contributor in whatever else he might do. And so thank you all again for your time in participating in this.
And if I may, Commissioner Hart, you're next. I'd like to extend the same message. Thank you so much, and you're not off the hook, to Council Member and Mayor Pro Tem Jill Hardy. Thank you so much for serving on our group and the work that you've done. And we thank you, and we're going to continue to pester you, whether you like it or not.
Well, I would be happy to help in any way I can, and thank you for letting me be part of the group. And school's out now, so no mask.
Okay. Commissioner Hart.
Thanks so much. The one thing that I think is rather pressing is what Supervisor Hopkins brought up with regard to forming sort of a joint effort to approach the resilience bond, because I think that's, you know, going to be really ramping up in January. So I think that it would be very helpful. Commissioner Brown Ziamanzada, Commissioner Bochco and I were involved in the last round of negotiations and discussions. And I would just offer to, along with my fellow commissioners, to act as a liaison, but I don't think this is something that could wait. So I am hoping that the working group will reach out. I'm certainly available if you'd like to reach out to me. And also on the state parks issue, I have a long history with state parks. I was on the State Parks Commission for 15 years, and I was recently a parks director here in Sonoma County. Be happy to work with the working group to move forward on the relationship with state parks and get them involved. So I'm hoping that we'll hear from you, or that it will be facilitated by commission staff so that we can get to work on the bond. Thank you.
May I please open the floor to any last closing comments? It looks like Commissioner Wilson would like in, and then I'll turn the meeting back over to Chair Padilla to adjourn. I think we can give you a couple of minutes back to your day. Great discussion, Commissioner Wilson.
I just want to support the idea that looking at the bond issue right now is probably something that we should do between now and even the next time we even get together, that this is reaching out to staff and figuring this out. And of course, we, you know, because of Brown Act issues, we do need to be careful of how many people are all talking to each other. But I'll ask Jack and staff to maybe help manage for that if they could. And let's see what we can do to get that going.
Jack, you may not want it, but would you like to offer any closing comments or thoughts?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Kaylin, and thanks, Commissioner Wilson. Yeah, we'll help manage that. Now, I just want to just express my deep appreciation and gratitude for the working group and all the hard work they've done, and this larger group. When we put this together last year, I have to say I was a little skeptical about how the progress we'd make. And I can't tell you how pleased I am of how far we've gotten with our joint statement. And yeah, it just goes to show you, once you get people together, and building relationships, that is the key to success. And that's what I tell my staff, and, you know, approaching things with humility and compassion and empathy really is the way to solve difficult problems. So that's all. I'll conclude on that.
Please, Carol. Please, Commissioner Groom, go right ahead.
I just want to thank Kaylin and Megan. They're exquisite facilitators, and when the minute we would sort of drift away, they'd very very carefully nudge us right back. And we kept to the agenda, but Kaylin and Megan, thank you so much. I mean, you're just such an incredible part of the team.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to work with all of you on this critical issue. I was born right about here at the Presidio. This issue is near to my heart, and working with you on this very difficult issue is a high point in our careers. Thank you very much. Chair Padilla, we're done with discussions. Oh, perhaps Commissioner Almanzada wanted in.
No, I was just gleefully waving goodbye as we have this luxurious 30 minutes of early meeting conclusion.
Chair, back to you.
Thank you, Kaylin. Thanks again to everyone, certainly to your team for facilitating. My deep gratitude on behalf of all of us, working group. This partnership between the commission and local government partners is a key piece of the architecture of the Coastal Act, and we're seeing it being brought more effectively and hopefully impactfully to life as we move forward. So thanks everyone for your participation. Thanks to the public who hung around and participated. Whatever your tradition is, whether for this holiday season, I wish each and every one of you the best, love and peace and health above all now, and grateful to serve with so many of you. So have a wonderful time. And without Commissioner Muranga, did you have a comment?
Yeah, that picture behind me, 3 dozen tamales. Happy holidays, everybody.
Holidays. With that, we will adjourn. And thank you all again.
Thanks, everyone. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
See you in the new year.